I guess.
You're younger than me, Keith. As many of you may know, I graduated high school here in 1974, and I'm just absolutely thrilled to be back in Reedsport and to bring my education committee here. And so I want to hear from your mayor a little welcome, and then we'll have a few words to say and then get started. So, Mr. Mayor, take it away.
Thank you. And as you know, I'm Keith Temchuk. I'm the mayor of Reedsport. I'm also a port commissioner for the Port of Umpqua, and for the last 26 years, I've been a teacher at Reedsport School District, 24 years in this building. And I'd like to welcome everybody in the audience, and especially the committee. Welcome to Reedsport, and especially welcome to Reedsport High School. We are honored to have you here today, and it is a very great pleasure to have Senator Walker back in these halls. Vicki and I were schoolmates, as she has just pointed out. We both sat many hours in this very auditorium watching films and hearing speakers and attending assemblies. And I think we both sat many hours in the student center that was just down the hall and around the corner. And memory fails me if some of those hours were spent skipping class. And memory is convenient that way. You see, we shared the 1970s RHS experience, and before that, the old Pioneer Middle School experience as well. As Vicki has pointed out, she's a Reedsport High School graduate class of 74, and I'm a Reedsport High School graduate class of 75, but I think you can tell by the gray hairs on my head and not on hers that she's aged much more gracefully than me. Being an elected official and a history teacher as well, I am drawn to history's great political figures. My favorite, of course, is Abraham Lincoln. And among Lincoln's great writings, there is a lesser-known quote that I often think of, especially as I engage in my own elective duties. Lincoln, as you know, was a great wit, perhaps the greatest wit in the White House. And it seems he once said that the 9 most feared words in the English language are, "I'm from the government and I'm here to help."
Back then, huh?
Recently, however, I received it from very high authority that Lincoln was speaking only about the federal government and certainly not about the state and local levels. I am very relieved. Senator Walker and I, and perhaps many of you, share a common rural community experience. And that was an experience where the schools and their activities were the hub of the town. Things and family schedules revolved around plays and concerts and ball games and swim meets. Jobs were plentiful, so young people stayed in town and raised families here. Generations had connections to the schools. Families stayed, kids were here, and our schools' hallways were filled. But unfortunately, here on the South Coast and elsewhere in rural Oregon, new forces are at play. Jobs are not so available. Families move away, enrollment shrinks, and schools face ever more dire funding crises. And as our schools suffer, our communities suffer too, because it becomes more difficult to attract the families that will again fill the schools, and as a result, begin to shore up our budgetary blight. I believe that the South Coast Educational Forum, from which you will hear today, is making great steps in the right direction to providing relief from our school funding problems. It is my hope and my trust that you will believe so too, and that each of you will do what you can to help us implement the important solutions that their forum proposes. Welcome to Reedsport. Welcome to Reedsport High School, and have a great day.
Thank you, Steve. In that long litany, I don't remember you mentioning powder puff football. But that was always the highlight of the year as well. And we all know, those of us from Reedsport know how Rupee Field got its name from Rudy Rupee, who was, gave many, many years to the school district, who died of Lou Gehrig's disease shortly after I graduated, but was a tremendous man and made a huge, huge impact in my life, as did a couple other folks here. Jim Wells, are you in the audience? There he is. Jim Wells and Daryl Woolsey taught me all about government and how to ask questions. And, you know, it was okay to question authority. That was what we did in the 70s, but that's what we did in this class. And I wanted to go to law school, never did, but I became a court reporter instead, and now I make the laws instead of enforcing laws, but that's okay, too. That's actually quite exciting. I really love the opportunity that I received at this high school. This is a really neat place. It's wonderful to be home. I'd like to hear just a few words from your principal. I don't think he knew I was going to ask him to do that, but I would. Patrick Gross, if you could come down and just give us an update about the high school and where we've been and where we're going.
Thank you, Senator Walker. I'm Patrick Gross. I'm new here in town, and I'm new as the principal of Reeseport Junior Senior High School as of last year. So I'm still learning about the proud history and traditions. What I see is what I see today. It's a district with declining enrollment. And, you know, a community, a wonderful community, facing some profound challenges. I see proud, old, tired building that has been lovingly cared for decades, and though with a lot of deferred maintenance, I just wrote a column for the school newspaper talking about how I couldn't help how clean and shiny the halls were, and what a good job our students were doing keeping them that way. We have 377 students, grades 7 through 12, and we're continuing to shrink. And the building stays the same, and the challenges of running a school stay the same. So what I see is a wonderful community with a lot of folks that step up to fill voids and gaps. And I've said a few times we're doing more and more with less and less. I see some, as you alluded to, still here, though the folks that made an impact in your life or retired, they're still in our community and still making an impact on our school and our students. They've been replaced by new and excellent teachers that a younger generation refer to with the same reverence and respect, and we're still making a difference in kids' lives. I don't know what more you would have me say right now.
The one thing I'd like you to tell the committee is what you told me in the hallway about the number of graduates going on to further their education, because I think it's a pretty good percentage. You just want to briefly touch on that.
I'm proud to share the statistic that maybe backs up what I just said. Our recent graduating class, the class of 2006, we did, you know, I guess you can't call it longitudinal tracking after 1 year, but we checked in on them very recently. Our counselor, Lori Mazzotta, and our Aspire coordinator, Tracy Duvall. And here's the statistic on how they're doing now. 70% are in college, either a two-year school or a four-year school. And 5% are serving in the military. And the remaining 20% are employed either part-time or full-time. So I'm proud to say that, you know, because of the efforts of our staff and teachers, and of course because of the support from, their families and the community, our most recent class of grads, are 100% of them are successful in one way or another. There's no one just out there waiting for something to happen to them.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the information you've shared with us today, and I appreciate your commitment to Reeseport.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to gavel in our hearing today, and before we get started, a hearing about the Regional Education Foundation, which I learned about some months ago and was just absolutely thrilled to see that you're taking matters into your own hands. I do want to say a couple of things. One, please turn off your cell phones or your Blackberries or your computers, because when we have people testify, it's really annoying for those folks to have someone's phone ringing. So thank you for doing that ahead of time. Secondly, if you wanted to testify, we had some sign-up sheets, but I'll ask again if you want to testify. third, I would like, unfortunately it's an in-service day and students are out of school, but I would like to know, are there any students who are taking the day today to come learn about their government instead of doing a free thing? So stand up so we can see you, please. Thank you. You're getting extra credit for it, I think it's absolutely great. And I don't know if you are, but, you know, most kids would just take the day and go do something fun. I think this is fun, but I. I just want to introduce a couple of our committee members. Senator Westland is ill today. He is from Tumalo, which is near Bend. Senator Verger is your state senator, and she is on her way down from Salem. She drove this morning and was a bit foggy, so she'll be here a little bit later. But to my right is my vice chair, Senator Jeff Cruz, and I'd like him to introduce himself.
Hi. Thank you, Senator. I'm from Roseburg, and I represent Southern Douglas County, parts of Jackson, Josephine, all of Curry, and Coos County up to Coos Bay. So coastal issues are very important to me. This is my second session on Senator Walker's committee, and I've been in the legislature since 97, most of it in the House, focusing in health care and now in education. So we did some good work last session. We expect to do some more good work this session, and it's really an honor to serve with you, Senator. And Senator Walker walked me down the hall a little while ago to see her senior picture. And you could notice there was just kind of a glint of precociousness in that picture that has now come to full flower. So as I told her, she's better looking now than she was when she was 18, which is absolutely true. I think we must have had very similar teachers. I mean, she mentioned a couple of her teachers, and I can point to about three teachers I had in middle school and high school that absolutely changed my life, and don't know what I'd be without them. So it's interesting the points in time when all the stars line up for something positive. So looking forward to hearing about what you folks are doing down here on the coast, and also informing you of some of the things we're doing.
Great, thank you. Senator Morse.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank all of you for coming this morning and for hosting this hearing. I'm from the Albany, the Corvallis area. I represent District 8 in the Senate. This is my second term. Most of my tenure in the legislature so far, in the two sessions I've served, this now being the third, have been on Ways and Means. That's the Budget Writing Committee. Our Senate President this session has made the selection to have policy, which this is a policy committee, we call it a substantive committee, members also serve on Ways and Ways and Means members serve on substantive committees, which I think is an excellent, excellent thing to do. It puts a considerable burden, however, on 30 Senate members to serve on substantive and fiscal committees, because there's 30 of us and there are 60 House members. So you have to divide up all of the work that is done by 60 members and apply it to 30 members. So we have our work cut out for us. But I'm absolutely delighted to be able to serve on the Education Policy Committee as well as the Education Fiscal Ways and Means Committee. We, of the fungible monies that we have, approximately 57% of our budget is dedicated to education. So we've got our work cut out for us, and I'm very much looking forward to the testimony today to understand the issues that you face that will help us in a much more, I think, effective way make decisions. We tend to get somewhat insulated inside the Capitol building, and folks that live in rural parts of the state having to travel great distances to testify, and it's a burden. So I think this is a great opportunity. I look forward to it. I understand from our chair that we also will be in Southern Oregon in
next month.
Yeah. So again, thank you for hosting us.
Thank you, Senator Morse. We are quite busy. We don't have time to hang out in the student center and skip class. I will also let you know that Representative Arnie Roblin, who is your state representative, is not here today because he's in Washington, D.C. He chairs the Natural Resources Committee on the House side, which is a new area for him, so he had to attend a conference on that issue, and he extends his best wishes to you. And I know he's been involved with the South Coast Education Forum, with this proposal you're going to be talking about, your Regional Education Foundation, and actually has a bill before the legislature to assist you. So with that, I will open the informational hearing on the Regional Education Foundation, and I'd like you to call up the three folks at one time to talk about it. Forrest Bell, your superintendent, Susan Anderson with the Oregon Education Association, and Karen Gray with the Coos Bay School District as their superintendent. And if you would just introduce yourself when you speak so we can get that for the record, that would be terrific. Because we actually have people listening on the Internet, which is just terrific.
Worldwide, right?
Yeah, worldwide. All right, thank you. Go ahead. I don't know who wants to go first.
Madam Chair, I will start. Thank you very much. And
thank you.
May I add my voice to those of Keith, welcoming you here and thankful that you are. I am Forrest Bell. I'm the superintendent of schools in Reedsport. I have been in that position for the last year and a half. Before that, I worked in several other districts in Oregon, but am pleased to be representing Reedsport this morning. To my immediate left is Susan Anderson, and to my far left is Karen Gray. Dr. Gray, of course, is the superintendent of schools in Coos Bay, and Susan is the area rep for Oregon Education Association. The three of us are a part of a subcommittee of folks who have been working on the South Coast Education Funding Forum. I would like to introduce several others who have a capacity as well.
And if they would stand as he introduces you, that would be great so we
Thank
can
you.
See who you are.
Julie Knoll, who is a teacher here in Reedsport, has been working with us. Karen Conley, a teacher in Coquille. Jeff Davis, who is the superintendent of schools in Central Curry, and someone who is not here with us today but has been instrumental in working with us is John Kinney, who was at that time the superintendent in Coquille. This morning, we would like to spend our time providing you some information about the work of this group, and we're going to start with Susan.
I welcome you here, too. It's nice to, for us not to have to drive the short distance. So we welcome any chance people come and see what it's like on the South Coast, because it is a wonderful place to be. You've heard a little bit alluded to already this morning about some of our financial crisis on the South Coast, but I'd like to do a short historical piece to tell you how we got to where we are and why we came together. For over two decades, the South Coast has faced a decline in business and industrial development and a loss of family wage jobs. But our schools kind of held together because they're well supported in the communities and they could pass money locally, and we still had forest money coming in. With the passage of Measure 5, we lost the ability to protect ourselves through local money. Even with the allowance to raise an operating levy, it doesn't support most of our districts. They cannot raise enough money to offset what we're losing in declining student enrollment. But they had, many of them still had cash balances left from timber sales when they got to keep their timber monies. That money has long since declined. And since we were already in economic decline when the whole state went into recession, we were hit with a double whammy. We spent probably too much time bemoaning the fact that we were in trouble and it didn't appear that anyone noticed, and looking at could we operate and do something within the state formula. But the issue with the state formula is that, as most of the people sitting behind me will probably disagree with this, but the reality of the state formula is it really does work. For the majority of the state, it's a sensible way of tracking school funding. But in two certain circumstances, it doesn't work. If you have a rapid student growth, it does not keep up. And when you're in our situation, when you have an ever-increasing decline in student enrollment, it doesn't keep up. We have done everything we possibly could within the existing system. We've closed every building we can close. We've sold off properties. If we ever had economic development here, we'd probably be in trouble. We wouldn't have the ability to expand our school buildings and house the kids that would be coming. But as the high school principal pointed out, we have buildings that are not anywhere near capacity. They're not small enough to combine with any other existing buildings to reduce that capital outlay, but it costs the same to keep them up if you have 800 kids in this building or if you have 300 kids in this building, but the state funding formula isn't helping us in terms of making up that difference because we're only getting the money for the students we have. So the beginning of last school year, we came together and began to have conversations about, do we want to try to do something regionally? No one school district can handle this problem given the current funding abilities that we have. And the decision was that we would. And so in January, we called together school board chairs and anyone they chose to bring, all of our superintendents, our leadership out of the respective teachers and educational support unions, and had some conversation about where do we want to go? What are our real concerns in the region and where do we want to go? And it was clear that that group of people truly did have an interest in coming up with a solution for us to make this a regional focus and recognize that our area was our responsibility. We could not expect someone else to come in and bail us out. So we developed two unique situations out of those discussions, and Karen Gray is going to explain to you what each of those are. Thank you.
Great. Madam Chair, could I?
Yes, Senator Cruz has a question.
I find it interesting, thank you, Madam Chair, that you say the formula works. I mean, if it was just an ADM, I might agree with you, but the ADMW, in fact, we had legislation in 99 to eliminate the waste from the formula, and in our discovery on that, we found that every school district in the state actually got more money except for Portland and Woodburn. And I mean, so I guess that's, and I understand the issues with rapid growth and rapid decline, but I guess I'm not quite convinced that the formula with all the weights that are currently in it necessarily works.
Well, it's not a perfect system, but in terms of pretty stable funding for the majority of the districts, they have it. There are just little areas in there where we can't rely on the stable funding piece, and that's what we're looking at. We need a stability here.
Okay. So, I guess, Madam Chair, you're saying that you like the stability. I guess my issue here is the equity, so.
Right. Yes, that's a whole other discussion. You're right.
Okay.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Dr. Gray?
Yes. Well, thank you very much for being here today, and it's a pleasure to be here to speak with you this morning. Just a little bit, I want to back up to make sure that the committee understands that we realized as a region that we needed to help ourselves and really didn't feel, and I don't feel, that a lot of people outside of this particular area do understand what our area has been going through. I've been with Coos Bay Schools in one capacity or another for 17 years, and this is my third year as superintendent. I was the previous special programs director. And just realizing that in my years with Coos Bay over the last 12 years, we have been in a constant state of declining enrollment, to the point where our budget no longer supported our school district, and we had to close school days, which I think is the most devastating piece of all of this. We went to Salem, one of my board members and I, Wally Hazen, who's in our audience, and testified before the legislature about what the superintendents and boards chairs did, board members did, and really I didn't feel like anybody really heard what we were saying. And so we decided we needed to help ourselves, and that is how our process came together. There's a certain pot of money, and we felt like education, you know, while we would like to have more, it wasn't going to come out of that either. So we looked to our region for our own solutions, not to just whine about not having money. We really wanted to do something active that we believed in, that we believed our community would support. And so we did meet in the meetings that Susan is talking about. We had Representative Roblin, business people, community people, educators, board members, superintendents. And out of that came a two-pronged approach. The first prong I'll talk to you about for a regional funding solution out of the South Coast Education Funding Forum is called the Friends of South Coast Kids Foundation. This is a registered foundation, nonprofit organization. We just finished our bylaws approval and seated our board, and we'll begin to have meetings with that foundation. The foundation is set up for the region, and the region includes 12 school districts out of Coos, Curry, Lane, and Douglas counties. And it asks businesses, it will ask businesses to donate 1% of gross receipts for any particular month of their choice. And so far, we've had the support of business for this, and in fact have had a couple of people tell us that they would like to donate to the Friends of South Coast Kids Foundation.
Can I stop you for just a second?
Sure, go ahead.
I want to make sure I understand that.
Yes.
1% of gross receipts for just 1 month?
Correct.
Out of the whole year?
Correct.
Okay. Okay.
And which is very doable. Remember, we have small businesses, and so they're not going to be able to commit to more than that, and we don't want them to. We want this to be very attractive and very doable for them. And our communities, as Forrest said, they are very supportive of schools. We've been very lucky in this area that a lot of our community has kind of made up for the lack of school funding, some of it. And so that's the first piece. That's the Friends of South Coast Kids Foundation. I want to also mention that those are not in competition with any other foundation that school districts may have. We're really looking to target folks that are currently not giving. We don't want to go back multiple times to people who are already giving. Part of that strategy is we will be having training for a subcommittee that's going to be doing this work. And so we're really trying to do this from a very sound, professional way. And people who donate to this foundation can give to something very specific, and they can also just give to the foundation.
And it is a tax credit on their tax return because you're nonprofit,
correct? I would assume so. It's nonprofit.
Mm-hmm. Great.
So it's a great idea, and one of the wonderful ideas this regional group determined for ourselves. The second prong is a legislative prong, and as was mentioned in the introduction, State Representative Roblin is looking at assisting us with a bill which will allow us to do two things. And one is to craft a regional boundary, tax boundary, that will allow us to collect a recreation tax. And also, I think there's a second piece that allows us to use those funds for particular ways to support education. And I would like to turn the microphone back to my colleague Susan Anderson to give a little bit more detail regarding this legislative prong of the solutions and to talk about restoration funds and getting closer to the QEM.
Okay, great.
I read the material that was sent to me, and it said it was an entertainment tax, and you've called it a recreation tax.
Oh, pardon, entertainment tax.
Okay, well, I just want a little explanation about what that encompasses, and are you going to be doing
yes,
that?
Yes, it's an entertainment, excuse me.
Okay,
and
great.
Susan will help us out.
Thank you.
In point of fact, the coverage of that tax has not actually been determined. We looked at it in terms of
okay.
entertainment tax, waiting for the State Revenue Office to give us figures. What the group is doing is targeting specific data to determine the scope of the tax. We, you know, the optimum thing would be to fully fund QEM for all of our districts. So we've asked the districts to put that material together, given the governor's proposed budget, current budget, what would you need over and above that to fully fund QEM for your district? The numbers are exceptionally high, ranging anywhere from $400,000 to $4 million. So that's a lot of money when you start adding up 12 districts. We also asked for the amount of money it would take above and beyond the governor's proposed budget to just backfill the last 5 years of cuts. Those numbers are slightly lower, so that we could reinstate some of the vital programs we've had to lose. Most of our districts no longer have nurses. They no longer have librarians. I can count on one hand and have lots of fingers left of the districts that still have elementary PE, music, and art. So we...
recreation tax... And also, I think there's a second piece that allows us to use those funds for particular ways to support education. And I would like to turn the microphone back to my colleague, Susan Anderson, to give a little bit more detail regarding this legislative prong of the solutions and to talk about restoration funds and getting closer to the QEM.
Okay, great. I read the material that was sent to me, and it said it was an entertainment tax, and you've called it a recreation tax.
Oh, pardon, entertainment tax.
Okay, well, I just want a little explanation about what that encompasses, and are you going to be doing
yes,
that?
Yes, it's an entertainment, excuse me.
Okay,
and
great.
Susan will help us out.
Thank you.
In point of fact, the coverage of that tax has not actually been determined. We looked at it in terms of
okay.
entertainment tax, waiting for the State Revenue Office to give us figures. What the group is doing is targeting specific data to determine the scope of the tax. We, you know, the optimum thing would be to fully fund QEM for all of our districts. So we've asked the districts to put that material together, given the governor's proposed budget, current budget, what would you need over and above that to fully fund QEM for your district? The numbers are exceptionally high, ranging anywhere from $400,000 to $4 million. So that's a lot of money when you start adding up 12 districts. We also asked for the amount of money it would take above and beyond the governor's proposed budget to just backfill the last 5 years of cuts. Those numbers are slightly lower, so that we could reinstate some of the vital programs we've had to lose. Most of our districts no longer have nurses. They no longer have librarians. I can count on one hand and have lots of fingers left of the districts that still have elementary PE, music, and art. So we do have some very basic needs we need to fill. We are a high usage of free and reduced lunch. And yet we desperately need counselors at the elementary and middle schools, which we do not have. So we're looking to just provide those services. And those numbers are a little more reasonable. Our smallest district, which is Mapleton, and probably the one in the most dire need right now, for just to refill the last 5 years of cuts, they would need an additional $463,000 plus over the governor's proposed budget. For a district slightly larger, like Reedsport, you're looking at almost $2 million, to backfill just the last 5 years of cuts, above and beyond what the governor's proposed. With one of our larger districts, Sayula, would be close to $2 million.
Sure.
Yes, please, Senator Cruz.
How are you defining cuts? I mean, for example, if if there were salary freezes, catching up, would that be? So you're just talking program, infrastructure.
Staffing.
Okay.
Right, staffing.
Okay, and the other question would be, what are you, in the governor's budget, how much are you assuming is going to be available? Because that has yet to be determined.
Right. The number we asked folks to use was the $6 billion figure, because my understanding is the additional $300 million would be backfilling the school improvement fund.
Right.
So that would be kind of earmarked
monies. Okay, but the, I mean, right. We're assuming the six goes into formula, which hasn't been determined.
Right.
There may be some of that's going to go into school improvement. I mean, that's a potential. Then,
right.
So.
And these are truly ballpark figures and not the figures we'll be using when we actually get to that point, because we're a long way out from even getting to that point. But folks are asking questions, and we needed to have a sense of what kind of numbers are we truly looking at so that we could look at the scope of what the tax might be. Because according to the State Revenue Office, 1% on hotels only for the South Coast region that we're covering, this would be the attendance area of the Mapleton and Siusa school districts in Lane County, the attendance area for the Reedsport district in Douglas County, all of the districts, of course, in Coos and Curry, would only raise $1 million, which is not even close to what the 12 districts would need. When we expand that 1% to hotels, restaurants, and bars, it raises 5.87. If we go across the board on all entertainment and recreational activities, excluding casinos, we can add an additional 1.29, which brings us to 7.16 million. So we're using that to kind of say what we'll be doing is looking at what the districts say they need to just reinstate the cuts and where the money is. And then the group, and it won't just be the subcommittee, it'll be the whole education funding forum, will have to sit down and say, how do we want to do this? Do we want it? We wanted to really try to stay in the 1% range, but given this, do we want to expand the percentage on a more focused group of entertainment, or do we want a lower percentage across the board? We're a piece away from that, because before we get there, we need the legislature to pass the first piece of legislation that Arnie has been so gracious to promote for us, to creating the boundary itself, because we don't really have any entities that allow us to do what we're looking at countywide and then some portions of counties. It's kind of a unique region that we're looking at. So that would have to be created first, and some kind of government body that would be able to collect and administer such a tax. The next piece, of course, is a much more problematic one, and that would be allowing us to use something other than property and income tax money to fund schools, which obviously you can't do right now. So that's a much tougher road to hoe, and we can't even begin to think about what kind of tax, the breadth of the tax, before we have those two pieces in place, because that's, until they're there, we can't go out and work for one and really put one on the ballot. But we are doing our homework along the way. We're trying to have a sense of which direction could we potentially go. We settled on the entertainment tax simply based on some polling we didn't do ourselves. We got from other agencies who'd already done polling on into-school measures. And it looked like that was the only thing we could potentially have a hope of passing here. So that's how we settled on the entertainment piece. We really did look at operating under our current types of tax base. So that's the kind of where we are at this point.
Okay, great. Senator Morse has a question for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Susan, could you tell us what the total student population is in the region that you're proposing, and what the total dollars would be to backfill the five-year cuts?
I honestly, although almost all my superintendents are here, we could come up with a number of student numbers. I don't off the top of my head know how many.
Madam Chair, it would be very helpful.
We could certainly
think of it in terms
data.
Of summary numbers as opposed to specific districts,
right.
Because districts
mm-hmm.
tend to
and I do not yet have a total of all the districts. We have a couple of school districts who've had some difficulties pulling those numbers together for us just from some staffing personnel issues. But we are getting that the rest of that data from those districts, so we could certainly provide that in a very short period of time.
Okay, that'd be great if you could just send it to the direction of our committee. Yeah.
Are you looking at this fund for just dealing with cuts and deferred maintenance and all these other things, or are you looking at it at some point in time that those dollars actually going
for running the schools, for operational?
Well, the school district boards, as they've passed the resolutions, have been very specific with us. They don't want us directing them on how to spend money, revenue that comes into their district. That's a local board decision.
Right. Okay, so
we're looking at this as operational funds, and each board needs to make the decision.
Okay.
However, I'm probably one person in the room that's been at almost every school board meeting. It's not every meeting, but every school board, and know most of the school boards. And I am pleased with the school boards on the South Coast in that they have made the commitment to program. You know, when it's, do we cut program or cut school days, you know, enough is enough. We need to protect our program at some point. So I have no doubt that the districts getting additional funding in this way will make the commitment to program, because that's where their heart has been all along.
Okay, Madam Chair, it's just questioning whether I'm going for operational dollars, if that becomes a Measure 5 issue.
Right.
We'll have that discussion.
Yes, and we have already been having that discussion amongst ourselves, believe me.
Well, and I wish Representative Roblin was here, but he's not. But we'll have that discussion with him about where he's at in the process with your regional tax idea. As
well,
the tax issues have to start on the House side, so
right.
That's probably why you're working on that end. If you can get it there and get it over to us, I think you're doing pretty well.
Well, our problem is the legislative council is behind, and I know the bills have to be dropped here really quickly, and you know they've had this since June, and we still haven't seen the bill. So.
Oh, really? I had like six that I dropped in June.
No way. You're still waiting too.
No, I'm not the only one, and I have to tell you that's really been a frustrating thing for all of us at the Capitol, particularly since we're on an expedited schedule this year.
Yes.
And trying to get done early. So
I'm not sure he can tell you exactly what the scope of that looks like yet, because he's waiting to see the legislation himself.
Okay, great. Well, there'll probably be some need for amendments and some conversation about that, but that gives us here some really good background when it does make it to our side of the building.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, you've heard Karen and Susan talk about the problems that we face. And you've also heard them talk about some of the things that we have thought to do and solutions. None of us who have worked on this believe that this is a perfect solution to a solvable problem. But the comment was made earlier this morning that I really want to confirm, and that is that somehow we need to get our fate back in our hands in this region. And we have suffered so long to be able to provide adequate educational services to our students. And it has not only affected our education systems, it has deeply affected our communities. You talk about a time at Reedsport High School that is a fond memory for you. I covet that same experience for our current students, and I assure you that they don't have the same program offerings now that you had when you were here. We understand we cannot do this by ourselves, and we also know that legislation will begin in the House, but we need you folks to support what we're attempting to do here. We definitely need you to help us, and it is our hope that somewhere down the line you will remember this day and remember this opportunity, and that you will help us to remove the barriers for helping ourselves to solve our problems.
Thank you for that. And Senator Berger has just arrived, so we'll let her make her way down front here. And was there any other testimony from any of the three of you on this topic?
If I could, Madam Chair.
I
fully understand that, but we also in Salem need to be mindful of what we have done, what the federal government has done to your employment base. And we need to be mindful of how we can get communities, and I come from one that's a natural resource-based community that really has been shut down mostly by federal regulation. And we need to, in fact, Senator Burge and I are part of the Coastal Caucus, and we are working, for example, on trying to figure out how we can get people back out fishing again, among other things, and cutting trees and things like that, which would be a huge benefit to all our communities. So it's not just, you know, if we had robust economies, the problems would be less. So, you know, and it's not just the funding, but what are the kids going to do once they graduate? And, you know, my older kids graduated in Roseburg, and one's in Seattle and one's in L.A., because that's where the jobs were. So, I mean, it's bigger than just the funding, and we need to be mindful of the big picture as well. Of having a robust economy so that schools can be funded and the graduates have something to do once they graduate.
Absolutely.
So. I had one last comment that I was thinking about, and we've had some discussion amongst ourselves. I meet with a group of superintendents called the Off the Record Meeting, where all of the superintendents get together three times a year. And then there's also a piece that's led by COSA called the, it's a school funding coalition, and I meet with them as well, and it's a statewide group that meets. We had an interesting conversation when people were talking about the 6.0 or whatever proposal, 6.06, from the governor, and it was kind of a bit in the room, like happy days are here again kind of thing. And I think that that's a very wonderful thing, but I really do want you to be mindful that for the Coos Bay School District, and I think I'm speaking for a lot of my colleagues in this region also meet once a month, that for some of our school district, they're still going to be looking at cutting school days. So while I think it's fabulous and great and wonderful that we're looking at more dollars for schools, significantly more, maybe even $750 million more, our schools still have a long way to go. So for us, it isn't adding specialists. For us, it's restoring school days. And I think I'd like you to be mindful of that.
Thank you.
Thank you. And before you go, I want to make sure that we've all had a chance to ask questions. Senator Morse has a question, and then I think I'll let Senator Berger make a comment as well.
Maybe have Senator go ahead.
Okay. Senator Berger,
all right. Good morning.
Good morning.
I apologize for being late. I was a little bit of a coward this morning. I didn't want to leave until it was a little bit daylight with the break of dawn and a little bit less fog. So it worked out quite well. But thank you for having me here to celebrate. I've got to say this at the opening for the wonderful people here, to celebrate the kind of education that Senator Walker received. She is an outstanding senator and certainly reflects a lot of her own education, and I know that she is happy to be in Reedsport today for that reason, and I am too. I think that in looking, and I'm sorry that I haven't heard what has preceded this, and so I hope that I won't be redundant, but I do believe that in looking at overall, when you talk about the education, and particularly in my district, we're looking at declining enrollment. And so that is the part of the big problem here, and until we can get an economic development and bring jobs here, we can solve the problem of the overcrowded schools in Hillsborough and Beaverton and all those just by redirecting our young families back to the coast where many of them want to live and study. So I think that that's part of the problem. Money is good, but money isn't everything, and you need children and you need families in these communities.
That's right.
And
family wage jobs.
I pass the IP property, and I look around my own area, but I have to be optimistic. I believe that we're going to do that, and I think it's going to happen sooner than a lot of people think. But nevertheless, the budget and wanting more money, and you know, if it were a perfect world, we'd all love to give as much money as any school needed, because education is the top priority with everybody in the capital. There's no argument about how important education is and what we want to do. The problem is that where do you take it from? And so I think the question sometimes becomes, who do you want me to take it away from? And even though people say, oh, I don't want you to take it away from seniors, I don't want to take it away from you know, the Healthy Children's Initiative, but you have to take it from somewhere. And so I think that we need to think in terms of building this economy back so we can quit having this declining enrollment and cutting days and closing schools.
And that's why we were looking at doing it ourselves instead of asking you all for more money. That's why we're asking for support of the Regional South Coast.
Yeah, we've had a great presentation about the Regional Education Foundation. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you're well aware of what's going on with that.
I am.
And I just think it's exciting that these folks have taken matters into their own hands because we haven't been able to fix it. And you're right. Senator Virgil raises an interesting issue about the need for more families with children. One, we don't have family-wage jobs. And I think the Coos Bay area in particular has seen an influx of retirees. So we're getting older people who don't have young children to go to school. And we need children in these school houses. So, let's bring them back, find jobs to attract the people. And I think that's an interesting thing. We could make those schools less crowded and just direct them down.
I tell them many times that when they're complaining to me about, do I understand they're overcrowded schools? I told them yes, because all the people from my area moved to your town.
we'll just close down Washington County, I think that way.
Senator Morse, you had a question, and then I think we're going to finish up here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to make some comments and then pose a question for you. There are many issues that impinge upon funding, especially funding for our schools. But the fact of the matter is the fiscal policies of the state of Oregon are broken. You are attempting to solve a problem that we should solve statewide, because what is happening in your region is not unique to this region. It's happening all over the state of Oregon. What do I mean when I say the fiscal policies of our state are broken? We have a hyperactive initiative system that has put demands upon what we call fungible monies, the general fund, that we can't support. To the tune of the last 16 years of the growth in general fund spending of $7 billion, nearly 50% of that spending has been specifically driven into initiatives, what voters have said to do. What we also have is we have a revenue system that is the most volatile of any revenue system that you could possibly invent. It's hypersensitive to our economy, and that's called the income tax. And what we also have is we have what we call this unique to all of the states in the nation, we call the kicker. So that when you have unanticipated revenues, what happens to them? They're not put into a rainy day fund to address stability of funding, because we know that the economy goes up and down. So we have a most, I think, problematic issue before us as legislators, and how are we going to build a foundation for the state of Oregon that really works and sustains us? And it isn't just this region, it's the entire state. Now my question to you is, there is some activity that's going on in the Capitol, and it's happened in previous sessions, to try to address this issue of stable funding and adequate funding for our most basic institutions, so that it doesn't become an issue of prying money away from one critical need for another critical need. And that's what we're faced with today in the legislature. My question to you is, you seem to be headed in the direction of a consumption tax to solve your regional funding problem that's specifically focused on entertainment. In your judgment, is the state of Oregon ready to consider a more balanced revenue system that does provide adequacy, that does provide stability, and in fact could provide a tax reduction for all taxpayers in this state, because those solutions do reside. We've worked diligently in the interim, a group of us legislators, in trying to craft those solutions. But a part of that solution is a consumption tax. Major reduction in the income tax and the consumption tax.
Well, given the response of the hearings, because I attended some of those hearings around the state last year, 2 years ago, where they were gathering information about that, I'm not sure the general public is there. I think those of us involved in the funding as it stands understand we need to do something. And frankly, if this legislative body manages to do that this session, we'll remove our bill. But we've been waiting through four legislative sessions for that to happen, and it's not going to just happen with the group of people sitting on this stage. It's not going to just happen with the people seated in Salem, and we all realize that. But we're looking at what do we do in the meantime. I think at some point, whether it comes this session, next session, 10 years from now, you're absolutely right. Somebody's going to finally realize, the majority of the taxpayers in the state are going to finally realize this isn't the way to do it. But we're not there yet, and our kids are losing in the meantime. Our businesses are losing because they can't attract quality people here. Our folks, particularly in the medical industry, will tell you that when they try to recruit folks here, everybody loves the coast, and it's a great place to live. And then they look at what's being offered in the schools and realize that they can go 2 hours east and get a full component of curriculum that we can never offer here because we don't have the money to do it. And they say, no, we're not bringing our children here. So while we do get are a lot of retirees who are frankly pretty supportive of the districts but don't bring in the children that we need to expand our school base, and are driving the property values up such that we can no longer recruit quality educators to the area to stay for any length of time because they can't buy a home here. Mm-hmm. So without the family wage jobs and expansion of the economy that allows us to bring the younger families here, it just is a snowball effect for us, and we don't see it ending. So you're absolutely right. The optimum fix here is an override of the state funding system, but we can't wait any longer. So we decided to try something for ourselves. And if in the meantime something happens that allows that to be fixed, more power to us. We'll go back to focusing on what we do in the classrooms and leave the money stuff to somebody else.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And Senator Morse has worked really hard on that issue, but that's a whole other hearing. Mm-hmm. We're not going to go there today, but it is a question that needs to be asked. And Oregonians are going to have to figure this out because we're doing this patchwork thing, and it can't last for long. And you know, someone has to pay the bill.
Okay.
So, well, thank you, all three of you, for coming. I really appreciate your attendance today. Was there... anyone else in the room who wanted to testify on this issue, the Regional Education Foundation? Great. Just any folks who want to testify, come on down.
Hello, I'm Judith Hansen, president of Southwestern Oregon Community College.
Oh, great.
And,
nice to have you.
I met all of you this week, and so I'm much appreciative of the time that you've taken to come to the South Coast after the very, very busy days. It's great, Chair Walker, to know that you say as much, speak as well of Reedsport when you're speaking to community college presidents as you do when you're here in Reedsport, and thank you for that.
You're welcome.
A great address, and had a chance to visit with Senators Cruz and Verger and listen to Senator Morris as you heard our testimony for community colleges this week. So thank you very much for your time. I'm here to talk about to reinforce the needs of education on the South Coast and the need for the Regional Educational Foundation. As you know, you've heard our testimony about community colleges and how we'd like to have $529 million. It's for the same reason here on the South Coast that our K-12 brothers and sisters need education. The collaboration between the schools and the college on the South Coast is legend. You've heard about our Pathways Initiative that began under the leadership of Brenda Brecky right here at Southwestern Oregon Community College and among our schools. We also have our director for our school-college relationships, John Berman, in the audience. I want to thank John for the work that he's done to make sure that those connections happen. Most recently, our college and Coos Bay schools and North Bend schools have worked together on a new initiative to respond to the bright future that we have here on the South Coast. It's an initiative we haven't announced yet that will be using existing resources at the high school and the college to respond to what we now know. We're hoping billions of dollars in workforce needs. Here's the problem. They're looking for a workforce when we have a declining high school population. We put together this really unique curriculum that we're about to announce using existing resources, small classrooms without the technological updates that are necessary and without the collaborative instructional and learning needs that we know are important for learning at both K-12 as well as high school. Equipment is the equipment left over from what we are able to save as all of our programs are declining in number. It is almost impossible to meet the needs of what we know is around the corner without being able to update and create the infrastructure. The infrastructure that is not just about equipment, not just about a buildings, but the professional development required to make sure that our instruction and the learning technology is necessary to meet the billions of dollars of workforce needs that we see in the next 5 years are met. We boast at the college because we have a little bit more flexibility. Great relationships not with our K-12 partners, but also with South Sweet National Estuary, with the Oregon Institute of Marine Biology, with potentially Jordan Cove that we think is going to be bringing in the big pipeline. But at the same time, we are all struggling with not enough resources to be able to meet the infrastructure, and we are really seriously concerned that without those resources, that those corporations will be bringing in employees from outside of our area that are not educated by us, that will not want to stay and brings their own kids to our schools, and will leave again as soon as that construction and those new corporations are built. We need your help to find the extra resources just to inject a little bit more than we have right now so that we can return to you when that big boom that we know is coming down the pike occurs for us. Any questions?
When are you going to announce this big boom?
Well, you know, we think it's coming. We really do think it's coming. And if one corporation doesn't make it, another one is going to. But we have to be prepared, because if we aren't prepared, we're not going to have the employees locally. They're going to come in. They're going to. Science or whether it's EMT graduates to meet the infrastructure needs for support for our population. And increasingly we need twice as many instructors that are full-time to meet those needs. As Senator Berger knows, in our office I was talking about the results of having declining funding are that at the community college we have an increasing number of part-time instructors. Not the best circumstance to be able to provide a solid response to the workforce.
Senator Berger, did you have a comment about this?
Well, my only comment, I think, would be at this time, and it's a pleasure to have Dr. Hansen here today, I would say that the partnership between high schools and colleges, particularly community colleges, is really being pushed at this time by the governor, and he made a great talk at a reception this last week at OEA. And I think one of the things that I have been reading about is that we've focused too much on going to the four-year university and getting a college degree when everybody is not going to do that. And perhaps even in high school, we need to focus more on someone going into the workforce. After all, you're 18 now, many of you, when you graduate. And so I think that those things maybe have to be refocused just a bit, in that we are preparing people to go into the workforce at a younger age and not concentrating so much on scholarships and which school. I visited a high school, Senator Walker, and I said, my, they're really intrigued with this computer class. And they said, oh, no, they're looking at all the universities and colleges that they can apply to. And so I think that everybody doesn't even need, not everybody doesn't want to, everybody doesn't need to. And I can tell you that I was handed a two-page list of good jobs that can be had without a four-year degree. And family wage jobs, and I'll say automobile service technicians is one. That is a very good family wage job, and we don't have enough of them.
Correct. And our Pathways initiative allows for students to go to work after high school, drop out, go back to college for a little certification, drop out, go work again, or work in while they're going to college. And so it's not about what you do for your whole life, but what you might want to do when you graduate from high school.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that.
Just one comment.
Well, yes. If
we could. Senator Berger, if you saw two pages of jobs that could be good jobs that don't require a four-year degree, I'm assuming it was a very small print on those pages.
It was.
Okay.
It was.
Because there's a lot of...
You're absolutely right. It's
a
very small online print.
And I applaud the governor for some of his initiatives, but I would also say that in his base budget, community colleges came up short, and that's something we need to address.
We had that conversation. Thank you very much, Senator Cruz.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. And we have one more to testify.
Good morning. Thank you for being here today. I'm B.J. Hollenstein, the superintendent of the North Bend School District, and I've just recently come to this community and came from a district that was right on the I-5 corridor. And it has been interesting to me to come to this community and see the difference between what happens when you have a district with declining enrollment to working in a district that had increasing enrollment. The district I worked in was growing slowly, so it was manageable in that we could address the needs of the new students coming in. It wasn't great bunches of kids, but a steady stream of increasing enrollment, which made building our budget a little easier in the times when there was declining dollars. But when I've come down here now to see what happens in a district when you have declining enrollment and less money coming in from the state, it's quite dramatic. There is quite a difference between what happens in a district with escalating, increasing enrollment, and what happens in one with declining enrollment. The districts down here, as I've observed and listened to people, have done a tremendous job, and the boards have worked really, really hard to make sure that programs have been saved. But just because of the difference between what I see of districts along the I-5 corridor up in the Portland area and what I see here, there has been a decrease in programs. So there is equality in the kind of money that is coming in per student, but there is not the equity in programs for children in this area that I saw in the other districts, simply because it's not as possible to keep those programs when you have declining enrollment plus the fact that you're losing money. So I think this initiative that has been started by the superintendents that have been here for a while is extremely important, because it is a unique situation, and I can really see that coming from where I did to here. It's different, and it affects kids differently. Kids are losing more here, more access to programs, than what they did up north when the declining enrollment was hitting the state. Or not the declining enrollment, but the declining dollars. We all cut. Everybody cut. But I can see that the cuts down here were more dramatic, and there was more loss of programs here than what happened in my previous district.
Any questions? Thank you for your testimony. I appreciate it.
Is the committee warm enough up there? You might have thought we were trying to make a point by having this meeting in a chilly auditorium.
It can be cold, but I heard that you don't keep the heat on in here to save money. And so we need to sit here and understand that.
That's
in a very real way.
That's part of the efficiencies of that we're working on.
State your name for the record, please.
I'm Robbie Law. Dr. Robbie Law, I'm a family physician here in Reedsport. I've practiced here for 15 years. And I thank the committee for coming down to Reedsport to hear testimony from a small town perspective. But my partners and I are really involved in the community. We wear a lot of hats here. The group has members on city council, school board. We're in the schools a lot. We mentor. We're team physicians. We tutor. So we have a really good opportunity to see the connectedness of things in a small town, and how the education and the quality of education directly impacts everything else in the community. There's two illustrations I'd like to make. The first thing is that by the end of this year, four of key people in our medical community are going to be leaving. The head respiratory therapist, our only anesthetist, and two physicians. And all of them have families and have cited as their considerations the quality of education their kids are going to get here. Now that's critical. I mean, that's 25% of our family, of our primary care physicians in town. And we're having increasing trouble recruiting to this area. It's always been a little bit more of a sell when you're recruiting to a small community. But when I came here 15 years ago with my wife and two of our three kids, the third one is a native of Reedsport. But when we came here, we were impressed by what the quality of education our kids would get. There was a swimming pool. Kids were involved in a lot of activities. It was a very strong faculty throughout the district, and it was that was part of the sell. That's why we came here. But now, when we recruit, we have to explain why it's not a disadvantage to come to our district. We're very proud of the statistics that Patrick Gross cited about how many of our kids go to college and how we're doing more with less. But the fact of the matter is, and we bring people around, and there's buckets in the hallways, and there's a beam that's getting ready to collapse over the swimming pool, and where the kids are their own custodians in school. That's not very attractive. We frankly are not able to bring family physicians with families, or nurses, or X-ray techs, or anyone with kids is going to look elsewhere first. And that's not only true for the medical community, but that's true for educators, for any professionals that are looking at our area. And that's important that's an illustration of how key quality education is to maintaining the infrastructure of a small community. I know you know that, and I know Senator Verger for sure, and Senator Walker have come from small towns, and so they know. And actually, Senator Cruz, you're in a rural district. But there's a big difference between living out here and living in the valley. I always have to scoff when I hear about urban districts that are bemoaning what they're losing when a lot of their programs are things that we never even had here. So it's a very difficult time, and in order for us to rebuild and keep our communities viable, we need to start with education. That's crucial. When you're retirement community, you still have to have healthcare professionals to take care of you, and those professionals are not going to come here. We're gonna lose an excellent medical community and medical care that we have if we're not able to maintain quality education to bring people in here. The second point has to do with healthcare workforce issues. That it's part of a bigger picture, but it does impact on us directly here also. I grew up in Astoria. My family didn't have a lot of means. I didn't come from a physician family, but I got a public education in an Oregon school. I was able to get to compete successfully and get into a college that eventually ended up in medical school at OHSU, which at that time gave a selective priority to residents. She no longer does that. This is indicative of the difficulty that we're having, not only in attracting people, but in growing our own healthcare professionals here. Since the economic difficulties in the state, OHSU became a public corporation. There's much fewer monies, less than 3% of their budget, that goes from the state to support clinical training. What that means is, even though OHSU is quite wealthy, their money comes from a different pot. And the money they get from grants to support their research, it's made them a very prestigious institution, is not money that goes to support training for physicians that are going to want to come to small towns and practice and take our place. The average age of physicians in the rural parts of the state is over 50 years old, and we don't know where those folks are going to come from to take our place. We're rapidly developing. Actually, we're already in a very difficult situation that way. So not only are we having trouble recruiting relating to the quality of education in the K-12 end, we're also having trouble with the other end of the pipeline in developing physicians that are going to come to small towns. Most the studies are that people that come and practice like we do in small towns typically come from small towns. But that story that I told you about how I got here, that's more and more of an improbability these days. I don't really see how someone in a position like I was in when I was going to high school could actually contemplate coming back here. You can't afford it, and there's no support for it. So we really feel as though it's crucial to invest in education. That's just the cornerstone of communities. We're fortunate now. I think we've got a bit more money in the budget. The mantra in the last session was, we have to live within our means. And I think we've done that. We've tried to do that, but what's the result of that is what the previous speakers have testified to. We're withering away, and unless we can find a way to improve funding for schools, both K-12 and higher education, our state's in trouble. So I really hope that you take what you hear today to give some incentive to go back and help us find a solution. I think the Regional Education Foundation initiative is a great idea. We're basically going to support anything that will help us keep our schools going.
Thank you, Dr. Law. We're running a little short of time.
Just a real quick related issue, but I don't know if you'll be able to be at Senator Morissette's committee in 2 weeks, I think. And
February the 9th.
February 9th,
in,
that's healthcare.
In Coos Bay, and right. I believe it will be at Barrier Hospital.
Right. But my question to you, Doctor, is are you taking advantage of the rural physician tax credit or the rural physician liability?
Yes, we are. That's important. It's useful.
Okay.
But it's not quite enough.
The authorization, so we need support.
Yes. No, I definitely. We've spoken actually with Senator Verger and I'm on the board of the Oregon Academy of Family Physicians. We strongly support that.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't think you're among those that abuse that. That was a little farther south in the state.
I think eligibility's requirements are an issue, but I don't think the program is wrong or bad.
I think
it's important to us.
Your comments about OHSU did not go unheard with me because I'm a strong critic of how they spend their money. Okay, well, we're going to move along. Mr. Mayor, are you going to have your teacher hat on or your mayor hat on?
I'm going to have my mayor hat on very quickly, and
okay.
That is to welcome Senator Verger, and she just comes since I spoke earlier, and as always, Senator Verger, it's a pleasure to have you in Reedsport, and I'd like to say publicly that I don't think that there's any set of communities in the state that are better represented than we are in this area with Senator Verger and Representative Roblin. They are tremendous representatives.
I agree with you.
Now my teacher and mayor hat, and I think I'll speak very quickly, and I would like to echo what Dr. Law and Dr. Hansen before him has just said, and that's the connectedness of schools and communities. And I think it speaks well as to what we have done in rural communities, and I'm sure this is not just a Reedsport phenomenon, and how far the communities have gone to pick up the slack in funding that we were not able to get because of our declining enrollment. And I just wanted to give you a few examples. We have put a tremendous burden on people who are involved and expect them to keep continuing to support schools year in and year out financially on their own with donation and dollar. And I think if you look in this, we sit in a facility here that is probably unrivaled on the South Coast, a tremendous facility. And Senator Walker, you and I realized that 30 years ago when we were sitting here in high school. And this is a facility that has been completely renovated due to dollars that are donated privately. And this is you're looking at a new a backdrop, a new film screen, all of the upholstery, the new carpeting in here, all done through dollars and a foundation that was raised privately. In fact, it was the chair of that foundation is a senior at Reedsport High School. It was a senior who was the chair of the foundation. So it's a great example of the connectedness between the community and the schools. I just attended a gala event, a dinner, in which $5,000 were raised in donations and in auction for our after-school program. We have a dinner coming up in April in which we support our sports programs to the tune of $30,000 each year raised in auction. This year we have an incredible amount of connectedness between our hospital and our schools, and I think anybody involved with our hospitals and the healthcare program in town, I think, can speak of that. We're very innovatively actually combining facilities. Part of our school district facility will now be a hospital facility, so we can combine and save dollars and improve the efficiency of the school district. And as I speak today, yesterday I was invited to the first CNA, Certified Nurses Assistant graduation at Lower Umpqua Hospital, and many of those students who are graduating at no cost to Reedsport High School are current students here. And I think that those are examples of how well our South Coast communities have tried to go to the greatest depths to support schools. And I just want to make a reminder, and I know I'm speaking, I'm preaching to the choir here, but this is not a handout that we are asking for with this South Coast Educational Forum. This is a hand in helping us solve our own problems. We've been solving them. We think we have an excellent solution here, and I trust that you will all take that message back to Salem and sell it for us there as well. So thank you.
We will. Thank you. And sitting next to you, sir?
Hi, my name is Dr. Ron Bale. I'm also a family physician here in Reedsport. I work with Dr. Law and several other physicians. I'm also on the Reedsport School Board. I just wanted to make 4 points for you today. First, is to point out that I'm sorry to say we're getting a second world education now. I wish I didn't have to say that, but that's the facts. Our children aren't getting the same quality education that you had coming up, Senator Walker, nor that which I had. This district's held together by outstanding teachers and staff and community support. And they're breaking. People are walking. We're a systemic crisis. I asked our superintendent, Forrest Bell, to give us a 5-year prognosis on where we're going. And I think out of that is the South Coast Education Foundation as an attempt to come up with some kind of plan to keep it together. But we're going down. That's the facts. As Dr. Law said, there is a direct link with the health of the community and education. We've been trying for 2 years to recruit another family physician to our practice and have been unsuccessful. We're losing a family physician from our staff now, in addition to the other members that he talked about. It's a tough place to recruit to now. It's tougher than when I came here 4 years ago. I worry about the viability of our hospital. Communities can survive without a hospital, but it's the school is at the heart. The school is what keeps the hospital alive in this community. And I know you understand there's nothing more important than education. You're in the same boat we are. We're stealing Paul to feed Peter. You're doing the same thing. We're trying to keep our programs alive. There's nowhere left to cut. Physicians are often accused of being arrogant, and I'm going to be arrogant here because I believe I've got the answer to the problem. It's facing, it's, we're looking right at it. We've got the ocean as a resource. We've been an extraction-based economy here on salmon and salmon fisheries and forests. We have the opportunity now to harvest energy from the ocean. We're a world in crisis. We're a country at war. We are dependent on fossil fuels. We need to wean our dependence off of that. We have a golden opportunity to develop thriving, sustainable economies based on renewable energy sources. We have a gold mine at Oregon State University with the Wave Energy Research Lab and the motor lab that they have there, and the leaders, Annette Bonjuan and others that are there. We've got the ideal conditions on the Oregon coast to harvest that energy. And that's underway. We're not doing it fast enough. I've been frustrated by the lack of initiative to go forward with this at a faster pace. We have a window of opportunity here as a state to be the international leaders in this technology. And this technology is tied into, I believe, what could be the ultimate replacement to fossil fuels, which is a hydrogen-based economy. And that's far out. That's down the road, but it does not have to be. And we have as a precedent the Manhattan Project during World War II, where we got the best minds together and in short order created an atomic weapon, but also nuclear energy. We can do that here. I would urge you to support this and to do what we can to bring the best minds to Oregon, because the jobs will follow, and it's excellent technology, and it's the way of the future. But it's not a guarantee if we don't make it happen.
Thank you, Dr. Bale. I know that Senator Berger and I are very supportive of this project. I served for 18 months through the Western Governors Association on a committee to look at making the West energy independent, and I brought this issue to them, and the first time that I raised it, they thought I was a crackpot. And they said, no, no, you can't get energy from the ocean like that. Well, I brought them the research and the data that they've done at Oregon State and made believers out of them. So I know that we're both very interested in making sure that project goes forward. And beyond education this session, renewable energy is at the top of the list. So you're going to hopefully see some real action on that issue as well.
I'd just like to comment that Mayor Chemchuk and I serve as co-chairs on the task force for wave energy and are meeting almost as we speak about that issue. Doctor, part of the problem is that when you do business in Oregon, it goes through the slow permit process and then the public hearings process and all the stakeholders at the table. And so it's not a bad idea at all to do it the way Oregon does it, but it does make it slow plodding. And I think that we are well on our way, but I think you're right. If we're going to expedite it, we would have to expedite it in the permitting process. And good luck.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it. We need to move along a little bit here because we're running behind schedule. So one of the reasons I brought down Jan McComb from the State Department of Education is so that you could hear about the new requirements that they're proposing for high school graduation, which is really quite relevant to you all and all of us across the state. We haven't, as a legislature, we can make decisions about that because currently the SIM and the CAM are in statute and the state board cannot ignore that. So the legislature really has to decide whether we're going to accept these changes. So I'd like Ms. McComb to come forward and I will close the informational hearing on the Regional Education Foundation, open it on the presentation that we're about to receive on the new graduation requirements, and then when we're done with that, we'll roll into Senate Bill 318, which talks about some the school improvement fund and hopefully some ways for you all to get some extra money for your districts. So, Ms. McComb, can you introduce yourself, who you're representing, and just, you know, blend the two issues together in a
sure
brief amount of time?
Thank you, and good morning, members of the committee, Chair Walker. For the record, I'm Jan McComb, and I staff the State Board of Education. I feel like I'm the boring intermission between the two exciting parts of the agenda, so I'll try to get it going here. I had some handouts distributed. The first one is the Oregon Standards newspaper. This includes all the education standards schools must teach to, both under the SIM and the diploma, and sometimes questions come up like, are we teaching civics? And so this would be a handy reference for you in the future. As is the state report card, somebody said they didn't think all legislators got this, and so I want to make sure you all had a copy of the report card. I also photocopied.
And Ms. McComb, did you make copies available for people out in the audience?
I didn't, but it's online on our webpage, and you can download all or pieces of it.
Okay.
I photocopied just page 38 from the report card that talks about SIM completers after 15 years. About 37% of students graduate with a SIM. And then also there's a table that compares the SIM and the CAM and the diploma as of today. So I think you also have House Bill 2263. That is Superintendent Castillo's bill that would do a number of things, but mostly repeal the certificate language in ORS Chapter 329. So My board members want to apologize for not being able to come. I called them all, and they all had prior engagements, and I hope you'll have an opportunity in the future to hear from them. I'm a poor substitute, but you're welcome to whatever I know and can give you. The board has been talking about raising diploma requirements for probably at least 2 years. They constantly look at what's in place, how can we make it better, but there was a real conscious effort to look at the diploma. The governor last, I think it was in January of 2003, made Oregon an American diploma state. The American Diploma Project looks to raise diploma requirements all across the country. So we've been able to use some of their resources. The board has really reached out to stakeholders for input. Just recently, we've had over 300 community meetings asking people what diploma should look like, and we've got 5,000 surveys back from people. And you have a summary of those surveys. I split things out in diploma and SIM, and so in your other packet, we have the board's white paper. We posted this on the web. And the SIM. And then also there's a table that compares the SIM and the CAM and the diploma as of today. So I think you also have House Bill 2263. That is Superintendent Castillo's bill that would do a number of things, but mostly repeal the certificate language in ORS Chapter 329. So my board members want to apologize for not being able to come. I called them all, and they all had prior engagements, and I hope you'll have an opportunity in the future to hear from them. I'm a poor substitute, but you're welcome to whatever I know and can give you. The board has been talking about raising diploma requirements for probably at least 2 years. They constantly look at what's in place, how can we make it better, but there was a real conscious effort to look at the diploma. The governor last, I think it was in January of 2003, made Oregon an American diploma state. The American Diploma Project looks to raise diploma requirements all across the country. So we've been able to use some of their resources. The board has really reached out to stakeholders for input. Just recently, we've had over 300 community meetings asking people what diploma should look like, and we've got 5,000 surveys back from people. And you have a summary of those surveys. I split things out in diploma and SIM, and so in your other packet, we have the board's white paper. We posted this on the web and made some meetings about this time last year asking folks broad questions. What do kids need to know in today's society? Then I took those comments and summarized them. So you have the summary. And on page 3 of that summary, knowledge and skills that were identified most were things like critical and analytic and logical thinking. A lot of people focused in on core academic subjects such as math, reading literacy, the arts. It wasn't a scientific poll. Lots of people weighed in from certain groups, so it wasn't even. But we got a really good flavor of what folks were thinking of. Then we did another round of surveys this last summer and asked people more specific questions. What do you think of adding a third year of science? What do you think of requiring that the math credit be at Algebra 1 and above? Do we need to require a second language? Should there be more arts? During the last few years of cutting, a lot of music and art were cut, and there were a lot of strong supporters of those areas. And so that The results of that survey is this document, and you can look at that at your leisure.
And when you say this document, could you please identify it for the record?
Sure. It's called the Oregon Department of Education Diploma Requirements Survey.
Okay. And this all of these documents that you're discussing are available on which website?
The State Board of Education website. And so if you go to the www.ode.state.or.us website, okay, the Department of Education website, and click on State Board, there's lots of information there, both this information from prior meetings and also if you go to the superintendent's drop-down box, she has high school diploma, and there's a lot of information there as well.
Okay.
So to the nut of things, on FinCam, the board, as I've said, has spent 15 years talking about the SIM and the CAM and how to make that work. In December, because the bill was being printed of the superintendent, she's come out in favor of repealing the certificates, and I asked the board if they wanted to put their name on the bill. And they didn't, not in December. They just really weren't ready to say we want to let go of the certificates. They're afraid that this might send a message to schools that all the hard work they've done was for naught. Also, the new diploma that they put together really incorporates a lot of elements of the two certificates. They don't want to give the message to school districts that they can just toss out all that work and do something else. They do support all the standards that are the foundation of the certificates, and that's why they built them into the new diploma. My members, when they voted last March, they split about 50-50 as to whether to overtly get rid of the certificates because some feel like they're just a distraction to the larger education discussion. Others feel like the certificates at least award students for some hard work. The superintendent's bill, House Bill 2263, repeals the certificates, I think it's 08-09 school year. So that's the year the CAM becomes effective. And so schools would not have to implement the CAM program as envisioned by the original law and is found in ORS 329. The diploma, however, it does have a lot of CAM elements in it. You should have a buff piece of paper which lays out the new diploma requirements. This is the Oregon diploma. This will soon be online. This is hot off the presses.
In this large packet, where would that be, Ms. McCall?
It would be at the probably at the bottom of your stack.
You have it on yours. I don't have it on mine.
I don't have it.
You don't have it. Senator Morris has it.
Is this the right one, Jan? Jan, is
yes.
This the right one?
Okay, do we have extras of these for any members of the audience?
No, I don't have a lot of extras, if any. I thought I had thrown some in, but I don't see them.
Okay, thank you.
And probably by tonight, they'll be online. They were also distributed to your offices yesterday afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not worried about us having the information. I'm just worried about folks here having information.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if someone would like to make copies, I know you're a strapped school district with no money, so if anyone would like copies, you're welcome to do that. The information will be online tonight, but if you'd like it, you can take my copy and make some copies. Does anyone here want any copies? Just raise your hand, and if you don't, we won't go to that effort.
I think I can summarize things pretty quickly.
Okay.
So, yeah, give us the Reader's Digest change of what the State Board is changing. So they're supporting now, if I understand it, in December they weren't so hot about getting rid of Simenkam, but apparently now with these new changes, they're in support of House Bill 2263 that would, and we're not discussing that bill today as a public hearing because it's not in our possession in the Senate, but the State Board of Education now supports the superintendent's proposal to get rid of Simenkam. They do not.
They're split.
Okay, well, that's not helpful. Because, I understand this. Because what? They're coming out with these new requirements, and yet the superintendent wants to get rid of Simenkam. So, Ms. McComb, can you kind of explain that to us here?
I could try.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Once all the elements of the diploma are phased in, the certificates will be obsolete.
If this bill passes. I want to assure everyone. If this bill passes, which I'm not sure it will, but...
One of the big questions with the diploma changes is when does this all phase in? And the board has directed an implementation team to go off and work on those issues, and that team would have... people from the community colleges and higher ed and school administrators and teachers on that to help them with that. They're looking at 2014 for maybe the last of the changes to be phased in, and that would be the math requirement. That's really caused the most concern amongst school districts is having all students take Algebra 1 and above, 3 credits of that. So that's one of the changes.
I think I would say the science requirement has also caused some consternation because some small school districts especially do not have labs. They don't even have sinks. I know they do here at this high school because but some of the schools do not even have sinks in their science labs, and I know that was the discussion because Jerry Berger from the State Board came and testified in front of our committee. But the State Board, please tell us what they came down on in terms of the science requirement, because I still believe they've included labs in that.
Mm-hmm.
What they have done is they've said 3 years of inquiry-based science.
2 years.
2 years is already on the books and is commonly understood, I guess, to include labs. So that third year wouldn't necessarily require a lab for a couple of reasons. One of which is they've expanded the definition of science, so it would include something like automotive science, agricultural science, and that's what the implementation team is going to look at. They're going to look at what that would include, and the department will have to devise a means to figure out if they're teaching to the standards, because that would still be a requirement that you teach to standards. But a lot of inquiry-based science can be done on laptops now. Of course, you need laptops. Or they can be done with much more simplified experiments, is my understanding. I'm not the science specialist, and I apologize for not knowing all the detail.
Can I ask you this question? And I don't want to put you on the spot because you just staff the State Board and the State Board's not here to throw darts at or ask questions of, which would be the polite thing to do. But my question is, the State Board, let's have an understanding here for folks in the audience. The State Board has made these decisions. And when I asked the question of Mr. Berger when he was in, actually it's Dr. Berger, when he came into our committee, I said, can you do this sua sponte? Can you do it on your own without the legislature saying anything? And he said, yes, that's our charge as a State Board. But the legislature can overturn anything that they have done if we so choose, correct, Ms. McGraw?
Yes.
Okay. So these new graduation requirements that they have now proposed will stand unless this legislature changes any of that. Is that correct?
The board will be informed by the implementation task force.
Okay.
It may be that something they've envisioned can't be done at all, or can't be done at the time frame that they had hoped, or would have to be modified. Also, legally, nothing happens until the board adopts Oregon administrative rules.
Okay. And they haven't done that yet?
Not at all.
But what you can say, what we can leave people with today, is that what's on this sheet of paper is most likely what are the new requirements for a high school diploma. Should House Bill 2263 pass and we delete the SIM and CAM and make some changes, and should these get adopted in administrative rule. Am I correct?
Yes, to a point.
Okay, clarify.
The two elements are somewhat separate but parallel.
Okay.
Even if House Bill 2263 failed to pass, these high school diploma standards could be implemented.
Okay, that's what I understood. Now, I also understood the governor understands with these higher requirements, it's going to require an influx of money.
Yeah, you bet.
Thank you. Because as we've heard today, which is really appropriate that we've heard this today, this is the whole South Coast is a region of declining enrollment and declining funds. Can you speak to whether the State Board has had discussions with the Governor's Office about the kind of money they would need to implement these ideas, these new proposals?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, they have.
Okay. And do you know the results of those discussions?
I know that there's a $10 million set aside in the Governor's budget for just the high school diploma work.
Is that within that $6 billion in the formula that he's proposing, or is that outside of that?
I believe it's outside the six.
Okay. Okay. So there you have it. That's sort of where we're going. It makes people a lot of nervous, Ms. McComb. I have to share that with you. It makes me nervous that, you know, now we're going to change the system. And so that's kind of why we're here, to hear from folks. So I'm going to give you a few more minutes to talk about any changes, and then I want to hear some testimony. And we'll take that until about a quarter to 12, and then we're going to talk about Senate Bill 318 and take us to 12:30, and then we're going to adjourn for lunch. Okay, so I'll give you a couple more minutes to talk about any change.
I'm really happy that you brought up the funding. That's a huge concern to the board. Some members more than others. As I'm sure you're aware, over the years, you have some folks who think this can be done without any more money. And, in fact, that's what happened with SIM and CAM. There really wasn't any money sent to districts to help them with that, all those new requirements. And people fear a repeat of that. And one of my board members is a retired superintendent, and she has a lot of concerns about the cost. And I've been trying to get some sort of fiscal impact developed on these requirements. It's my hope that with the implementation task force, we reel in some COSA members, and they help us.
Explain COSA, what that is.
The Confederation of School Administrators, Oregon School Administrators.
Thank you.
So all the superintendents and principals of our schools. We don't know right now how many schools already require 3 years of science, for example. Some already do. Some already require pretty rigorous math, but most probably don't. We've got really high-performing school districts that are doing everything right, and they still only get a third to a half of their students up to those rigorous math standards. So that's a big concern. Nobody wants to see a huge increase in the dropout rate. And I think the board has decided that they've heard a lot of this input. If they believe they need to provide some vision for the state, and they've asked the governor for money. $10 million in a one-time allotment isn't going to sustain this effort. there needs to be identified some source of funding to keep this going. If you require students to reach these higher levels and you don't give those students extra help to reach those higher levels, then that frankly becomes a civil rights issue for those kids, because a high school diploma opens the door for the rest of their life, and if they don't get that, that's a huge financial impediment to them. And so there's going to have to be the infrastructure in place to help these kids reach these standards. You can't just say, go do it. And frankly, we need counselors. A few years ago, the board required that every student have an education plan, and that works a lot better if you have someone in your school helping you with that. It just, the goal was to help students focus on their classes and what do you want to be and think about the future, and if you want to be a nurse, maybe you should take that biology class and just get them to be a little bit more focused. But it's very tough. And they're very conscious of the financial, fiscal impacts, and they want to find out what that is. And it's my hope that the implementation task force can come back and say, you know, in the foreseeable future, maybe we only go forward with one of these things. We have a superintendent and a counselor who act as advisors for the board, and they've just been so invaluable to give us that frontline perspective. And they both loved the plan and profile, and they ran through their students' histories to see if adding 2 credits in this one area of either the arts, professional technical education, or second language. That went up from 1 credit to 3, or that's the plan. And initially they were concerned that that might hurt kids, and they went through their entire roster of kids at their schools and found out it would only have affected like 6, and that probably could have been worked out. So it is a concern, and that is something that the legislature will have to think about.
Okay, let me ask one more question, and then I want to take some testimony from the audience. The standards have just been announced by the State Board, and some of you now have this in your hand. Is there any more opportunity for public input in those standards, or are they pretty much a done deal as far as the State Board is concerned, and the implementation task force will report back to the State Board? I just need to know if there's a chance for anyone in the public to actually talk about these proposals from the State Board.
Absolutely. Chair Walker, as you know, I used to work at the legislature, and so when I went over to the State Board, I was a little taken aback at the lack of process for public input. We have, at the beginning of each day of our agenda, we usually work a day and a half each month. There's an opportunity for public input. Since I've been there, we've gotten all the board members up on the web page with their email address. You can always email them directly, or whenever I get email, I forward it on to all of them. So there's always that opportunity. Probably the bulk of the input they were seeking in these large 300 community meetings, that's probably over with. And it'll be up to the implementation task force, who represents educators and the public, and hopefully get a few legislators on that task force too. Then they'll be carrying forward recommendations to the board. But absolutely, you can always email us.
And the implementation task force begins its work and ends its work when? Do you have a starting and an ending date?
We're trying to put that together. We're trying to develop a process for it. We're already getting volunteers to serve on the task force. So we have to develop a process of how that's going to work, whether there's going to be subcommittees under that task force. So they'll probably be working for the next 2 years, starting, you know, as soon as we can put it together in a month or so.
We're just concerned that, you know, if that's going on for 2 years, what are the graduation requirements? So we're not comfortable, I don't think. Yes, Senator Cruz.
And like you said, we can't beat up on Jan because she's just the messenger here. And actually, I miss having her in the legislature because she was good. And that was a whole other issue. We won't go there. But you know, just as an example of how things tend to get bureaucratic when you're dealing with the department, and this is the superintendent's bill, but if you look on page 10, section 17, where they take what currently exists as far as a district being able to hire child development specialists, and it's all local at this point, and it's all under the purview and control of the local school board, and you look at what they want to do, they set a whole bunch of hoops that a district has to jump through with the Department of Education to create the program and then set standards. I mean, this is the sort of thing we need to make sure we aren't moving towards, is to, you know, we talk about local control. This is not local control. This is bureaucratic nonsense. And so that's some of the things, quite honestly. And that's some of the concerns I have with where we're going with whatever SimonCam becomes and what graduation requirements become, to make sure that they're, I mean, one of the things, and I have spoke in committee on this, you know, is I'm not sure that algebra is necessarily should be a requirement for all students, but developing the critical thinking process that math requires is what's critical. And so I think we're going to have a lot of discussions on these subjects as we move forward.
Okay, thank you. And normally in the Capitol we don't allow clapping.
Well, I appreciate it.
During committee hearings.
No, it doesn't happen in the Capitol.
So, Ms. McComb, thank you. I'm going to cut you off here, but I don't want you to go away because there might be some questions that come up. And House Bill 2263 is the superintendent's bill, and that starts on the House side. So if you want to have input in that, you need to contact the House. And Representative Buckley, Peter Buckley from Ashland, is chair of the House Education Committee, and they have two of them. They have two subcommittees underneath them. They have a higher ed committee, and then they have the K through 12 and innovation committee. And so you can get all this information online, and I would encourage you to do that. So what I want to hear from you all, there's a whole lot of people who signed up for 318, and I think you kind of signed up for both, but, you know, I'm just going to sort of open it up. Specifically, we'll get to Senate Bill 318 in about 20 minutes. So right now, the testimony I want to hear from you is, what is your position about the new proposed graduation requirements and or SimonCam, and what do you think about it? And there's a lot of folks here, so if you can just keep it a little bit brief, that would be great, so we can have everybody have a chance to be heard. And the first thing you need to do is tell me who you are so we can get that on the record. Thank you.
Good morning and welcome, Senators, and thank you for listening. My name is Jane Snyder. I'm the chairman of the Myrtle Point School Board, and my day job is that I teach school in Coquille. Senator Cruz, your name is on the wall in my classroom because I have a chart of elected officials to help my students understand the structure of government. My concern about the diploma requirements is that, yes, our students deserve to learn the 3 years of math, the 3 years of science, or the 2 years of lab science, the second language, the arts. Yes, all of these things are very good, and our students deserve them. But our question, as people who have to develop the budgets and plan the school year for the students, is, where's the money? I'm very happy to hear that the policy and the funding portions of the Senate are talking to each other about this. Our request is no unfunded mandates. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I will also indicate that we are having lunch in the cafeteria from 12:30 to 1:30, and we'll all be in there. Senator Cruz has to step out to do a quick radio show, but you can have one-on-one conversations with us at that time, too. Ma'am, you're next?
Yes, hello. Madam Chair, honorable members of the Senate Committee on Education and Government, my name is Ruby Price. I'm the superintendent of the Port Orford-Langroy School District, and I'm pleased to be here with the chairman of our board of directors, Joe Brown, who has have been part of an effort of the Board of Directors to really save this little district over the past few years and help it remain financially solvent, although we are at a bare minimum with absolutely everything. I did want to say that I am very, very supportive of these efforts to increase opportunities for our students. I also serve as principal of the high school, of Pacific High School. We have 130 students, between 130 and 140. I'm pleased to say we're only down 2 students from last year, even though we too are losing our families. But we are trying to create a magnet site where people are who are homeschooling are coming back, and we're doing a variety of things. And I believe I'm very supportive of these efforts to give our students these opportunities, because I know that it's not just our students that are graduating are not just competing with other people here in Oregon. We're in a global economy. If you've read The World is Flat by Thomas Friedman, you know that our students are competing with students in India and China. And I think what is egregious to me is to think about, as we've heard former testimony, we are going to have economy come back to our area. And for us to not to have the capability to have world-class science, world-class math opportunities, to not have labs with sinks. I'm happy to tell the Senator Walker that we do have several sinks in our lab, but not what we need, not what we need. And so I just want to say that we absolutely need support for this. We do have, we are hiring staff that could have the capability. I have a young man we hired out of LA. He's a pre-med who moved into teaching because he felt led to do that, and he is using the most archaic equipment in his lab to be able to present to do the work. We have, when I look around my staff at a staff meeting and I look at them, I see that we have departments really saved this little district over the past few years and help it remain financially solvent, although we are at a bare minimum with absolutely everything. I did want to say that I am very, very supportive of these efforts to increase opportunities for our students. I also serve as principal of the high school, of Pacific High School. We have 130 students, between 130 and 140. I'm pleased to say we're only down 2 students from last year, even though we too are losing our families. But we are trying to create a magnet site where people who are homeschooling are coming back, and we're doing a variety of things. And I believe I'm very supportive of these efforts to give our students these opportunities, because I know that it's not just our students that are graduating are not just competing with other people here in Oregon. We're in a global economy. If you've read The World is Flat by Thomas Friedman, you know that our students are competing with students in India and China. And I think what is egregious to me is to think about, as we've heard former testimony, we are going to have economy come back to our area. And for us to not to have the capability to have world-class science, world-class math opportunities, to not have labs with sinks. I'm happy to tell the Senator Walker that we do have several sinks in our lab, but not what we need, not what we need. And so I just want to say that we absolutely need support for this. We do have, we are hiring staff that have the capability. I have a young man we hired out of LA. He's a pre-med who moved into teaching because he felt led to do that, and he is using the most archaic equipment in his lab to be able to present to do the work. We have, when I look around my staff at a staff meeting and I look at them, I see that we have department heads for each one of our areas, and we have no departments behind them. We have one staff member. We have one teacher who teaches science, one who teaches math, one who in each one of those areas. We have only one AP class, and that's in writing, 121. You see, we have, in order to implement this, we actually have to clone one of those science and math teachers because we don't have the ability to be able to add those other sections. And I guess I just want to close. This does come back to that ADM. It does come back to looking at programs for our schools and what does it take to have that program and then to be able to look at that in light of that ADM. Thank you very much for being here and listening to us.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Excuse me just a minute. And we have a number of people testifying. If you could, those of you that do testify, it'd be very, very helpful if you could give us just a very brief opinion with respect to Sim and Cam. Does it meet, is it doing what you thought it would do, and should we keep it or should we let it go?
It worries me. It worries me to see. We are a district that has taken the SIM very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
We are a district I'm proud. I am brand new there. This is my first year, and I wish that I could give you the percent of our students that graduate with the SIM. We have a trophy case with their names, in that it is featured in our hallway. This is a very serious accomplishment, and we have teachers that are moving the students through this. And to say to them that, oh, well, that was then and this is now, no one has yet convinced me that the SIM requirements are, I believe the words were that once the elements of 2263 are phased in, the SIM and CAM will be obsolete. No one has convinced me that that is true.
Perfect. That's what we're looking for. Thank you very much. Sir, you're next.
Hi, my name's Terry Plotz. I'm mainly here as a parent, I guess. I wear many hats in the community and was trained as a teacher. My wife is a fourth grade teacher in this district. And related to graduation requirements, we've had two children graduate from this district, one from a district in Minnesota. We've homeschooled, we've Christian schooled, we've public schooled. We've done most everything. And we have some great teachers here. But I have to admit, between the SIM and the CAM and the local graduation requirements, and I'm a reasonably intelligent person, I've been totally confused. And a lot of the people that I've talked to within school districts have been confused because of trying to meet too many different requirements without having the means to do it. And one of the things that we've talked about here this morning related to declining enrollment and funding is also the means of having the teachers to accomplish that. When we're required to have a second language, but the only way we can do it is to hire a retired teacher for 3 hours a day and not have it available in the junior high or for any other courses, how are we supposed to meet those? How are we supposed to meet the electives when we have no teachers that are free to do it because they're tied to teaching the core subjects which we need and which our students need, but there's nobody left to teach? I would also encourage them not only to look at funding, but perhaps relaxing or changing some of the requirements of who can be in the classroom. I no longer have a teaching certificate, but I was a biology and psychology teacher. I've managed nonprofit organizations of over several million dollars on budgets. We don't have a personal finance class. We don't have home ec. We don't have most vocational classes. And many of the students that I coach in eighth grade basketball are probably not going to take those upper level math classes. Because I had 10 out of my kids were not eligible at the beginning of the week. They need the stuff to get the basics, but they need the other ways, the other electives, the other things to keep them in school and to help them learn to be a productive employee and stay in the area. So it is all tied together. It's not just funding, but also who's going to teach the classes. And if we could come up with one plan and not say, well, is this SIM, is that CAM, is this local district, is it the new diploma? Now, I'm on the site council, and I really feel for our administrators who are trying to figure out how to schedule and how to meet these requirements when basically we heard today that the State Board of Education doesn't know what the requirements are because they can't make up their mind. How are the teachers going to do it? I have an eighth grade student who's a good kid, he's a good student, but I'm concerned for his education. And I'm concerned that he's going to be able to get the kind of education that he needs to compete and to live in the world.
Thank you, sir. Very much.
I'll make it very short. My name is Larry Anderson. I live in Brookings, Oregon. Happen to be self-employed. Was an educator for 8 years, been self-employed for 31. Happened to serve as the chairman of the school board and also president of city council. To answer your question on assessment of the SIM and CAM, I lost my first election over that question. My answer was I thought it was a program that was doomed to fail. That was 7 years ago. So it appears that with the legislation that's on hand that my forecast was fairly accurate. Number two, the new graduation requirements. I have been very upset ever since I saw them come across my desk. I heard the term visionary. Well, I'm a visionary, but I'm on Main Street. And I've been an employer for 31 years. I see the skills that these high school graduates have or don't have when they come to me. And I'm making a prediction again that this math requirement is my only rub on this graduation requirement. I support the science and et cetera. But if we're going to require algebra 1 and above, it won't be too long. You know, I look at the high school population as the high achievers, you know, the college bound that's been spoken of. And then I look at a middle strata, they're gonna make it, satisfactory or so thereabouts. And then I really look hard at that bottom strata, at the bottom 30%, quite frankly, folks, I think you have to be able to add and subtract before you start heading off into geometry and these advanced maths. I'm seeing people that come to me that don't even know what a common denominator is, can't add fractions, can't fill out time cards. And so what I see happening is if this new requirement is implemented, you'll be seeing some kids, they're smart enough to figure out they have a time frame to achieve this. And they're going to figure out very quickly, if they don't have success in Algebra 1, they're not going to make it. So I'm out of here. And we've experienced this in our district before regarding kids realizing, because we had a requirement of 27 units to graduate at one time, and kids were figuring it out that they're not going to make it, so they bailed. Well, that complicates a lot of problems, not only for the school district, but for society in general. So anyway, I support the graduation requirement, but not the math. It needs to start at a point where kids can be successful, learn those basic skills, and then if you want to move on into those advanced math, great, but not as a requirement.
Thank you, sir. That's exactly what we're looking for. And I appreciate that you're all coming down instead of waiting so we can speed things along. So you, sir, are?
I'm Tom Wright. I'm a science teacher here at Reedsport High School. I teach chemistry, physics, physical science, and environmental science. And to address SIM, first of all, SIM has some very good components to it. SIM still needs some working. For me, it has helped tremendously in teaching reading skills, and particularly to science students through the science classes. So that's been one benefit. However, the science SIM labs, I find, are something that's very useful to somebody who's going to be a science major in college. However, if you're going to major in a non-scientific field in college, that SIM lab is something you're not going to be using much in the future. As far as the math is concerned, I'd like you to think yourself, how often have you used math above algebra 1 in your daily lives? I only use it to teach my science courses. When I'm not in school, I don't have to use that. Earlier, we were talking about needing auto mechanics and a segment of school that's being cut out of our programs. If we put more money into teaching math, we have less money for programs for basic needs for the students who are not planning on attending university. Those math courses should be taken by students who are going to university, but as a basic requirement for a graduate, for a diploma, I disagree with having those.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Good morning. I'm Kenny Kent. I'm a retired superintendent of Bandon School District for 7 years, and prior to that, I was a teacher here at Reedsport School District. And a graduate of Reedsport School District back in 65. I recently retired because of the frustrations I felt with the Department of Education and, yes, even the legislature because of the education mandates. We don't have the money. We don't have the resources. We just plain don't have the ability to make every kid a college graduate or a college potential graduate. We're leaving out a huge percentage of our kids by telling them that they're failures by not walking into Oregon State or to Southwestern Oregon Community College. As far as the SIM goes and the CAM, ask Dr. Hansen how many applications that she looks at for kids that want to get into college that says that a SIM or a CAM is important to them. It has absolutely zero value at the post-secondary education level. Throw it out. It doesn't work. It's a waste of time. Finally, the new bill for the proposal by the Department of Education for the additional science math requirements. What they haven't told you yet is that along with that is an additional requirement for hours and graduation. Right now, you can graduate in Oregon with 21 high school credits. When this is fully implemented, you'll need 24. That means more teachers in the classroom. Oregon does not have those teachers in the classroom. Thank you.
Thank you. Try not to clap, folks. Great. I know it's hard, but thank you. And, ma'am. You're next.
Good morning. I'm Chris Nichols, and I'm the superintendent from Brookings Harbor Schools. Been an educator 29 years, and I've been in Brookings for 15. When I arrived there, we had two foreign languages at our high school, beginning through advanced. We had a full array of electives, including in the vocational area. We had beginning band, and we had numerous other electives and offerings for our students. Since that time, we've lost three counselors, a home ec teacher, a computer lab position at the elementary school, three elective teachers at the high school, and other reductions totaling six people throughout our district. to replace those people as we talk about what will happen, you know, if you could build back with the money that's being talked about make a difference? Just to rebuild back what we consider to be essential would take $725,000. In 2002, since 2002, the instructional budgets at our building have been cut by $80,000 so that what we need to buy for our teachers to teach our children is no longer there. It's very limited. When I look at what some of the new high school requirements are for the diploma, I suffer the same problem Ruby does, and I suffer the same problem that Kent alluded to, and that is, who's going to teach them? Who can I pull in to do that? And when you talked earlier about talking about the funding and saying, well, we don't want to take it away from healthcare to give it to schools, we're all fighting over the same bone, and we do the same thing. Am I not going to buy textbooks? Am I not going to fund football? Am I going to cut band? The reason our elementary kids get to go on field trips is because our PTA provides it. The reason our track was recently resurfaced is because a community group raised $150,000 to do that. I want to offer our students everything all the other students get. We are fortunate. We still have AP classes. We have 2+2 classes with the college, and we are able to still offer some form of progressive education for our students. But, you know, it's becoming more and more difficult all the time. The SIM and the CAM are a reality for us. Even though we're a small school, we've managed to continue to do that. About 20% of our graduating classes are in SIMs, and we've given out 3 CAMs, which we've celebrated and thought was really wonderful. But when you talk about the additional high school requirements again, we have to make choices. We haven't purchased new computers for our labs for the high school for 10 years. Technology is what gets put on the back burner when I have to hire teachers or buy textbooks or fund buses. They haven't renovated. We've been able to add, you know, capacity and those kinds of things. We don't have enough bandwidth coming into our community to be able to upgrade any more computers and add programs to our system as it is, because we're at the end of the line. The testing format, though, it's computers. We're required to test on TESA. So, again, we're going to have to decide, do we want to buy shoes for Johnny or do we want to buy shoes for Sarah? But somebody needs shoes because we need computers. So, and in when we talk about declining enrollment, I've lost 106 students since 2004, which comes up to about $593,000. Our costs have not declined, just our revenues. We're on a limited income, like many other people in the state. Our motto is to offer hope, possibility, and opportunity, and that gets tougher and tougher each day. So I ask that the committees consider all of the schools, and we're not alone. We're not unique to any other part, but we do need bodies or money, whichever, because they all kind of add up to the same thing. Thank you.
Very much. Once again, Karen Gray from Coos Bay Schools. I'd just like to offer a few brief observations about SIM, CAM, and the diploma. I've been involved in lots of conversations regarding SIM and CAM and its implementation. And here are my thoughts. With the SIM test, you can't possibly judge how a school district is doing based on a snapshot in time. Progress in schools should be measured with multiple measures as growth over time, as more aptly demonstrated in the Oregon report card. In order to pass the SIM in math, you need Algebra 2, and most of our kids haven't even taken it yet by the time the test is given, and I think that's just illogical. Districts don't have the staff or money to train people to score writing samples, yet that's part of the requirement. One population we haven't discussed at all are students with special needs who take SIM. Students whose first language is not English taking SIM, and then we blame them for not getting our schools to AYP. And so to me, we have an even bigger issue here where NCLB goes crosswise with IDEA,
we base IDEA on individual student performance, and yet say by 2014 that child born with a cognitive disability had better be running that race at the same pace as everybody else. And I think that's absolutely unfair and always has been. I never understood it.
We don't either. Trust
Thank you. I support solid assessment. With good instruction comes solid assessment. It's part of it. And we use that assessment to inform instruction, not to impose sanctions or juicy front page stories about how our school districts are failing. Frankly, as an educator for 27 years, I wouldn't miss it for 5 minutes, and neither would my staff or administration. So we always were in the business of good instruction, with or without SIM and CAM. As far as the CAM went, you can call it professional tech ed, career tech prep, 2+2, school to work. You can call it whatever you like. It's always been a good idea. Coos Bay Schools never waited for SIM to get itself together, or CAM, excuse me. We've been doing CAM for years, and we're going to continue to do what's right for children to get them ready for the working world and for post-secondary education. My observations about the new high school diploma requirements are this. As were stated by other testimony, you need money to fund this. And I think it's a joke to think that you're going to have more math and more science, including labs, and not provide additional funding. If the governor intends to add $10 million outside of his budget for this purpose, that's $35,000 to Coos Bay Schools, which would not buy you half of a teacher. So I kind of don't get the numbers there as far as the money goes. The second piece is that it increases special education children once again to not be able to pass coursework, of which time they are on modified diplomas, which don't count toward graduation. They count as dropouts. And so our schools who get these report cards and get these adequate yearly progress reports will continue to show as failures at the high school, even though we are making marvelous strides. And I think we do a fabulous job with next to nothing. And special education and ELL students will continue to get the blame. And I think it's wrong.
That's good. Thank you. Thank you very
Sorry
much.
Sorry for the question.
Well, you've all been very well spoken. Thank you, ma'am.
My name is Pamela Soles, and I have a student that graduated in 2002 from Marshfield and currently have a junior there at Marshfield, but I'm speaking for my Aspire students. Aspire is a program sponsored through the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, and my current 7 students are a Native American, a Vietnamese, a Hispanic, a homeless person, one that's already gone to the military, one that maybe won't even get through high school, and one that's on an IEP. And this is not necessarily an unusual assortment. So what does a SIM do for them? It lets them wear a red cord when they graduate. They don't understand what it has to do with anything. There's no goal. They have no desire to achieve it. Marshfield does a pretty good job. They devote the time of an educational assistant pretty much full time to try and make this system work. It doesn't work. The others, not only is it an unfunded mandate, it's pretty much the target changes from day to day. These students don't even try because they don't know where the target's going to be. If they're talking fifth graders aren't going to worry about things now because it's going to change 4 or 5 times by the time they get to graduate. And so there's no advantage to it. What systems are working for these same students and what have they done? It's the do-it-yourself systems that have been successful. Our homeless student taking advantage of the clinic that our nurse started, the 2+2, and the Pathways program, and Aspire, which is run with a little bit of funding but mostly relies on volunteers to make it work. And that's what works. So for when they're thinking, the legislature thinks about what they're going to request and what they're going to fund, many of these students will be taking the SAT on Saturday, and they always have a word of the day. So I couldn't help but thinking of the word of the day had to be oxymoron, because that's what we seem to be proposing for our students as we go along. So thank you for coming and listening to our comments, and hopefully I can give some insight from our students.
You did. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Deb Reed. I'm a school board member in the North Bend School District. And I'll just briefly say something about STEM because I think other people have said things much more eloquently than I could possibly attempt. I don't think it's filling its purpose, and I would really like to see you repeal it. Mm-hmm. I would also like to share a story with you that we experienced in our district last year. We've been looking for several years at tightening up our own diploma requirements, and we were looking at different levels of diploma. So we had our usual diploma, which is a little bit tighter than the state's, a merit diploma, and then an honors diploma. We had last year a wonderful student representative from the student body, and as we were sitting there talking about these diploma requirements, he piped up with, well, you know, what about me? And he was a classic example of a student who is a literary genius, but he would not meet our merit and honors diploma requirements. He certainly would not meet the diploma requirements that you have before you. So I would like you to consider that as you're looking at those requirements. Students are not all alike. You know, I'm a math and science geek. I think this is a wonderful set of requirements, but not all students are built that way, and, you know, thank goodness. So what I would like to suggest is a middle ground where you consider a merit or an honors diploma for students. Keep the standards that you have now, but then allow them to aspire to something greater. Don't force them. Thank you.
Thank you. Very much appreciate that. And I tried everything I could to get out of science class here at RHS. I didn't like it.
Sue Martino. I'm a former member of the Senate Educational Advisory Committee for the 21st Century School Act. And I've also served as a state commissioner for 7 years under the Department of Revenue, and Senator Cruiser recognized the Charitable Checkoff Commission. I'm a retired teacher, retired early, and part of it because of all of the requirements that have been going on for schools and less to do with. I don't think that the Kim and Sam have worked. I don't see the colleges paying that much attention to them. I think requiring more and more and more to graduate as far as your math and science, I don't see that all students are going to be going that way. Poor Einstein would have never made it through all the English. People have different requirements. My daughter graduated from Reese Court High School, and she was an excellent student. She had a great education, and I thank God every day that she graduated before the full impact of what I'm seeing right now. You think these kids have a good education right now? It's not because of the teachers. They're not getting what they need. I have seen so many programs cut. And the minute that came out with, we're going to require more math and more of this, the first thing I heard coming out of educators' mouths is, well, we're going to have to cut this program, and this program. I would like you to show me the money, because we haven't seen it. We have been legislated by the federal government, by the state government, and you have not funded anything you have legislated. I think it's deplorable. And the Senate needs to stand up and recognize this, and people in this state need to stand up and shout, because it needs to change. And adding more and more to what they have to do with less and less is not going to solve the problem, it's going to create a bigger problem. Now, my daughter was a science and math person.
because of all of the requirements that have been going on for schools and less to do with. I don't think that the Kim and Sam have worked. I don't see the colleges paying that much attention to them. I think requiring more and more and more to graduate as far as your your math and science, I don't see that all students are going to be going that way. Poor Einstein would have never made it through all the English. People have different requirements. My daughter graduated from Reedsport High School, and she was an excellent student. She had a great education, and I thank God every day that she graduated before the full impact of what I'm seeing right now. You think these kids have a good education right now? It's not because of the teachers. They're not getting what they need. I have seen so many programs cut. And the minute that came out with we're going to require more math and more of this, the first thing I heard coming out of educators' mouths is, well, we're going to have to cut this program, and this program. I would like you to show me the money, because we haven't seen it. We have been legislated by the federal government, by the state government, and you have not funded anything you have legislated. I think it's deplorable. And the Senate needs to stand up and recognize this, and people in this state need to stand up and shout, because it needs to change. And adding more and more to what they have to do with less and less is not going to solve the problem. It's going to create a bigger problem. Now, my daughter was a science and math person. She is a rocket scientist, I guess you could say. She goes to launch with her satellites. She had a very good education, and she did not have to meet Sam and Cam or anything else. But she took the courses that were offered, which of many of them are not now, and got there.
Thank you, Ms. Martin.
And I want to thank you very much for coming down and joining us.
You're welcome.
And these people you have taught before me, listen to every word they said, because they were all right.
All right. And Mr. Wells, please don't tell any stories.
Madam Chair, be careful. You might get detention if you...
Good morning. I'm Jim Wells, retired teacher here at Reedsport High School, and very proud of Vicki Walker and see her as chair doing what is she doing. I'll tell you, if the legislature has found her a bit of a pain in the neck once in a while, you should have seen her in the classroom.
I told you no story.
No, I loved it. It was just the kind of, she was a challenge to her teachers and a joy to have. And a lot of wonderful things happened in the classroom and between teacher and students, and it was always fun to have a challenging student like Vicki. But my comments on Sim and Cam and graduation requirements. These top-down mandates are just, they're undemocratic, and they don't meet the needs of the individual. They're well-intended, but it's all upside down. We should have this coming from the community. It should be community-based and coming from what is needed from the bottom up. And let the communities decide what their students need. I think this is the most democratic process and meets the needs of our students best. I think the people that are revolting against this system are the people that are withdrawing their students and homeschooling. And they're telling us something. And I think they're saying, we know what's best for our kids, and maybe the school district doesn't. And I think we should be listening to this and tapping into this. Individual needs are much more important than societal needs decided by a legislature or a federal government. please give the people the opportunity to mold their children and develop the education they need. Quite frankly, and I'm a strong public school advocate, but our school model is based on a 19th century industrial system that is outdated. And we need to be thinking outside the box on how we organize our schools. There's a national group that has studied and made some recommendations. I can't quote the name of the group right now, but recommending some new ideas on how we organize and fund. We can't fund this educational system with the system that Senator Moore has mentioned, how we're spending our money. This model does not work anymore in this economy and with the mandates that are forced upon it. We need to rethink how we provide this education. It must be more individual, more family and student and teacher directed, and less of an institutional industrial lockstep method. It has to be more seamless, more open-ended, more it has to be year-round. Also, I think the idea of education going 9 months is insanity in this day and age. And I don't think it has to cost more money. It has to be better organized and more, like I say, individual-based and community-based. One thing this community has to offer is a great resource of people outside of those that are qualified according to the state to teach. And we need to rely upon this community-based situation to provide better for our young people. So I hope that Sim and Cam goes, and I hope that graduation requirements are more based on what the community needs than what the state requires. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for holding that applause. Hi, sir.
My name is Guillermo Sean. I'm the shop teacher here for Reedsport High School.
Uh-huh. Excuse me, shop?
Huh?
You still have shop here?
Yeah, and I started last year. Excuse me for my voice, because I was talking to the kids. I work in my shop day and night whenever the kids want to be there.
Okay.
We were there until 8:30 last night, so my voice trying to talk over the equipment is kind of gone. I've heard a lot about the industrial arts and stuff like that from you guys, but I thought maybe you'd like an insight. I'm from one of the instructors. Now, I graduated from North Bend in 1976. And in North Bend, 1976, we had a logging program where we actually went out and logged. We had a housing program where we actually built houses and sold the houses. We no longer have that anymore. The state doesn't even recognize us as we're considered electives, okay? But the kids that graduate from my classes, it's not an elective. It's a way of life. And so if we're going to support that, then you need to get rid of the math requirement and say, hey, can you do fractions? We went and looked at American Bridge last year. Their human resources person told me, you know what, I'll hire any of your students that can pass three tests. One, show up on time. Two, pass the drug test. Three, read a tape. Mm-hmm. Now, for most of us here, that would be a slam dunk, $21 an hour job. $21 an hour out of high school? How much did you make out of high school? They can't do it. She can't get 50% of the applicants to pass all three of them. My class, I had over six kids until 8:30 last night working on wood projects, not hanging out on the highways, not doing drugs, not robbing somebody. Building something. You're more than welcome to come into my shop during lunch, take a look at their stuff. It's something you would buy out of a store. That's how, the quality they're doing. And they're doing it with 90-year-old equipment, and the wood's all been volunteered. We've got very little budget for this stuff. And we're doing woods, metal, computers, foundry. We're doing it all. We're doing it all with no money. The people here are the ones volunteering. I came out of private industry, This isn't what I started out to do. I've got a master's in computer science. I decided to go and teach kids. Yeah, I can make a lot more money than I'm doing it here, but we gotta take these kids and do something with them. Because I don't want to pay for them going to prison. And believe me, I know, because I was one of those kids. I went and tree planted. I did all the blue-collar jobs. I've done all those things people have seen on your couple of pages of don't graduate, don't go to college. I've seen it all because I did it. So, you know, hearing it from me, you don't need the math. What you need to do is go back to basics. Do the basic stuff. Those people who want to go to college, that's great. I'm all for it. I got my master's degree, but I didn't get it until 10 years ago. After I decided that I needed to do something more than just blue collar. So don't cut the other kids out, because when you add that math, I go away. I become a ghost. We no longer have it. Thanks.
Thank you. Ann?
Hi, I'm Carissa Hicksenbaugh, and I teach English to junior high students. And this is, I taught SIM for 8 years, and when we went through college, that was part of our graduation requirements, too, is to be educated in the SIM. And the one thing I've noticed now, because we've gotten through and we've got generations that have been tested since their third grade and they're all up to eighth grade, that we have more of a sense of failure, because it's the same kids that have failed, you know, from third, fifth grade, et cetera, especially in English, where you have the IEP students and you've got 30% of the kids. I've got, in eighth grade, I've got at least 8 or 9 kids who can't read above the third or fourth grade reading level. How are they going to pass that test? And yet I'm trying to teach them to be able to pass the test, knowing that they are going to fail, and knowing that they know that they're going to fail. And so how do you teach them, saying, okay, education is important. Now, I want to base you on improvement, but I have done in my master's study, because I did a master's in reading, we'll finish it this summer, the SIM tests, if you had to take the test of tests, you're trying to tell them they're going to improve if they take it again. They don't. They are not correlated. Statistically, they are not correlated. So that means that testing, even though they say they're testing the same information, they really are not testing the same information. They can flux about 13 points down or up on the second test. To me, that does not seem valuable. You cannot tell them they're going to improve, and no matter how much instruction you give them, it will help them, mind you, but it may not make them pass. And then you also have the 30% on the bottom you know are going to fail anyway. So I think my instruction as an English teacher would be much better used if I could focus on those children to make it to where they can improve their reading, to improve their English skills so that when they graduate they can function in the society rather than trying to take a test all the time.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I know that I can speak for the committee that we really appreciate your testimony, and that's why we're here today. Yes. Okay, yeah, I don't know that we have a microphone that can reach up there, sir. That's good. Can you please tell us who you are?
I'm Dr. Charlie Burton.
Okay.
I'm a medical scientist and physician. I taught for many years at the medical school and then went to a private practice in the first hospital in Portland. I want to just make a couple of observations. First, having to do with what the Senator said about our initiative process. We could name 4 or 5 names, I think most of us here could name 3 or 4 names who put this state in the condition that it's now in. They slowed the electric bill of goods about lowering taxes, but schools wouldn't be damaged. We would not become the most policeful state in the State of the Union and all that. So I agree wholeheartedly with what you say. We just slowed the bill of goods. Otherwise, this meeting would not have to be held today. We wouldn't be in this terrible state in education. Then I wanted to just say a bit more about what Dr. Law and Dr. Bale said. Not only are we losing a very good family practitioner, we've lost a very good internal medicine specialist, one or two, so we're down to one internal medicine man or woman. I met a person who's looking at coming to take that job to another internist, and he told me that he has a son in high school, and I thought, but it turns out that his son is in 11th grade in New Jersey and going to stay in New Jersey. So he will not be concerned about whether or not his child is going to get an education in this town. So maybe he'll come here. If we lose the anesthetist, then we lose the surgeon. We only have one surgeon in town. So if we lose him, we lose the surgeon. It goes on and on. Finally, let me say this. I heard some oxymorons today. Lab-less biology, lab-less chemistry, lab-less physics. That's like military intelligence. You cannot teach biology without a lab. You can't teach chemistry without a lab. You can't teach physics without a lab. Others of the sciences you can teach if you, you know, if you want to work in technology, you can get away. But as far as science goes, the high school student trying to learn chemistry without a chemistry lab. Furthermore, when that child gets to college, and that graduate gets to college, it's expected of him that, or her, that he'll know how to work in a lab. And so they've got 12 threats against him when they get to college.
Thank you, sir. I'm hopeful that we were able to get those on our we were? Okay, great. Because we like to have this and preserve it in archives. We like for people to be able to hear on the internet. You can actually go out on the internet at any time and listen to any of our committee hearings. And I really think it's important that Oregon has an opportunity to hear what you've had to say today.
With my knees, I cannot do
that. Well, I don't blame you, sir. We were able to accommodate you. I'm going to close the informational hearing that we've been provided today, and I want to thank Ms. McComb for coming down, and I hope that you take back some of this information to the State Board, Ms. McComb. I'm sure you've heard a lot of it before, but I think it was important to hear it again. I'd like to, we have about 15 minutes left. We're going to kind of shorten up what we were going to do with Senate Bill 318. We're going to skip this PowerPoint, even though we went to all this trouble to put it up, and I totally appreciate it, but it would take time. So I'm going to, first of all, gavel in a public hearing on Senate Bill 318, and because I feel like I've been talking a lot, I'm going to let Senator Cruz explain what we're doing after you hear from our good committee administrator. And I've been remiss today. The administrator sitting next to me works very hard for our committee, for the whole committee. Her name is Dana Richardson. And the person that is staffing us over here is Heather Gravel, and they work very hard for you in the state capitol and today. So, Ms. Richardson, could you just let the audience know what Senate Bill 318 does, and then I'll have Senator Cruz give us a little bit of information.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 318 modifies the types of grants that may be awarded to school districts. It requires school districts applying for grants to fund 25% or more of grant activities. It removes the intent statement linking the School Improvement Fund to Quality Education Commission recommendations. It directs the Department of Education to establish monetary rewards for school districts and programs that show extraordinary progress towards student achievement goals. It declares an emergency and would take effect July 1st, 2007, if passed.
Okay. So I'm going to have Senator Cruz give us, he said he can do it in 3 or 4 minutes, tell you why we came up with this proposal in the school improvement. In the school improvement plan. I'm glad it wasn't my name calling me to the office. And so I'll let you do that, and then we'll take some testimony. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm going to have to apologize because I do have a radio commitment in 10 minutes, so I'll probably do this and then have to step out of the room.
Okay.
But, and the folks, you know, I love Southern Oregon. I just love Southern Oregon. I was born and raised here, and the common sense we've heard from these folks today is just so refreshing, and I appreciate it a lot. This bill came out of a commission that the Senate President put in place at the end of last session. It was the Senate Commission on Education Excellence. Both Senator Walker and I were members of that commission. And in fact, there was 7 senators on that commission, but also there was a whole lot of other folks from business, from school board superintendents, folks from PTA, teachers. I mean, it was a pretty good group. We broke ourselves up into three different subcommittees. One was focused on investment in early childhood education. Another was focused on capital maintenance and construction funding. And the group we were on was the accountable, efficient means of delivering K-12 services, is what it was called. And each group came up with a set of recommendations. The ones that came out of our group were to establish school district efficiency review process, transparency, and to modify school improvement fund, which is what this bill is about, to target investments and monitor performance, and the last one was to move towards more transparency as well in the budgeting process. And the result of, and then all three groups got together and kind of shared their ideas, because we worked for 6 months kind of independently of each other, and then we came back together as a commission and tried to kind of pull everything into a series of bills, which we were able to do, and we came up with 9 bills that are in the process at this point in time. Some of them are House bills, simply because they deal with things that the Senate can't deal with, which is revenue enhancements. So, but this bill is in our committee, and what we were looking at was part of the design of this is quite simply to take the school improvement fund concept, which has been on the books and was funded, and then the funds were withdrawn from it, and we want to refund it, and we have set a target figure of $200 million?
Oh, in the, no, we've, well, 200, 300 million.
Right, I mean, before it really becomes viable, and how that happens is yet to be determined in the process, but we wanted to expand this to allow schools to look at restoring program. And in fact, we developed a list, and it's, you know, things like full day K and stuff like that, mentoring programs. I mean, there's a whole list, and the list is not exclusive. Other things could be applied for, and quite simply, we thought it was time that we moved in the direction of trying to help districts restore things that have been lost. And I'm seeing some folks that are nodding their heads that have probably read the bill. So we thought was a good starting point. We had some discussion in the commission. At one point, in the front section, they had moving to full day K. We have another bill that fully funds Head Start, which is pretty much fully supportive at this time. The decision on kindergarten was to put it in the list rather than make it a specific priority, quite simply because there are other issues around that. For example, there are some schools that don't have the infrastructure necessary to go to full-time K, and we didn't want to punish those necessarily. You know, that would potentially set up a scenario where the rich get richer, because it'd be full formula funding for those students, for those schools that did have the classroom space necessary to do that. So that will be a further discussion. Is that enough of a front end on this thing?
Yeah, and I'll just fill in. The school improvement fund was something that the legislature established in 2001, and mm-hmm. then we didn't fund it.
No, we funded it, and then
we
cut the funds during the recession.
Yeah.
So we cut the second year funding and never visited it again. So,
right,
yeah.
And so it's been in statute, and I discovered this program called Accountability Block Grants from the state of Pennsylvania, where they had a Democratic governor and a Republican legislature, and they actually worked together, invested a huge amount of money in their school system, and they liked it so much that they've re-upped the program. And we discovered that we could just put those ideas into the school improvement fund. And those ideas are, as the senator lined out for you here, in the bill in section 2. And there's a menu of items for districts to choose from.
The purpose of that is to give you the flexibility as districts to choose where you would spend the money to beef up programs, because perhaps you already have mentoring programs, perhaps you already have programs, kindergarten programs. Some districts already do, and you don't need money for that. So we've allowed some real huge flexibility, I think, in the bill to do that. But the kicker, I think, that was really important for me is that we had accountability in here, because the public really likes accountability for how we spend their money. And so when you apply for these grants, through the Department of Education, they will expect a report from you, and if you are not meeting the standards of the grant, they will come in and provide assistance for you to do that. So you're not left dangling, but you're going to be held accountable. This program will not work if we don't fund it. And so that's where you're seeing the extra $300 million is being talked about going into the school improvement fund. And we're hoping to add more. I had just checked my BlackBerry to see if I'd gotten an email from the Capitol. I wanted to give you the bill numbers on the 9 proposals that the commission had submitted, but I didn't get anything back from them, so I'm not going to quote. Oh! Ms. Richardson, I should have known. She has those 9 proposals. Because in that PowerPoint, they just have Legislative Council draft numbers. So I don't really know what they've been turned into in terms of bill numbers. If you want that information, I can get that to you. But specifically, we're talking right now about Senate Bill 318. It's about 25 after 12. We can go a little bit into the lunch hour. But if there's anyone who would like to testify about that bill in particular, I'd love to hear from you now. So just come on down. I know a bunch of folks sign up, but like I said, I think you did it for both bills. So just come down, identify yourself, and we'll go forward.
I'm Susan Anderson, taxpayer in Coos Bay, and that's how I'm speaking today. I support the funding of the school improvement fund. The problem that I have with it is not the accountability side. I think there's no problem with saying we're going to give you grant money. We expect you to spend it on what we gave it to you to do. My problem is the requirement of the districts putting up the 25%.
Okay.
When we're talking about restoring programs, we can't fund it all here. We now have to pull that money away from something else we're already spending it on to reinstate the programs that this bill would allow us to do. I don't think that's accountability. I think that's the top-down management you've heard all morning about. If we're locally controlled, let us be locally controlled. Thank you.
Great to hear. Thank you. Anyone else care to put in their 2 cents? Okay. And one of our concerns was the grants. If people think, well, you're going to give these grants out, what happens next year and the year after that? So that's why there are some other bills in this package that add money to the school stability fund. That's why we're working very hard, and Senator Morse has been a strong champion on this, as well as others, about a rainy day fund, so that we can put that money in there and have it available to reapply for these grants.
Yes, ma'am. Sue Martino, president of the Coastal Douglas Arts and Business Alliance. I think I said, show me the money, and I'd like to see some of that money come this way. However, I'm reluctant to acknowledge that it probably will. It seems that our districts are going to have to come up, as you said, with more money in order to get the money. And I'm wondering if most of that money is going to go to districts that are already doing well. And those that really need the money are going to be left out again. And that's a real concern. And I hope that you'll look at that issue and see if there's something that you can do for these districts that desperately need money to improve their educational systems and get them back to where they once were.
Thank you. We have this bill up for hearing again in Salem on Tuesday, and I'll raise this issue in the committee.
Okay, thank you very much.
The question that's been raised today. And if there are any other questions, let us know.
Okay. Well, I'm going to... Do my committee members have a question about this bill? I'll close the hearing on this bill and then open it up for any other discussion that we have, unless you have questions. Okay. I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 318. We're so formal in the legislature, but... and I will just open it up. Anybody who didn't get a chance to speak today, we've got about 5 minutes. We're here for you. We're going to have lunch with you. But come on down so you can have your voice on the record.
Thank you. I'd like to I'm Ron Wardman. I'm on the school board for Myrtle Point. I also taught there for 30 years, retired 8 years ago, started my own business, and I want to respond to something that Senator Berger said. When I was teaching at Myrtle Point back in the good old days, we had 7 vocational teachers and almost 30 vocational programs. At that time, ESD put on a skills day with hundreds of kids that participated in it, and it was one of the things that the kids looked forward to all year long, to compete with other schools and to on a head-to-head competition in welding and construction and things like that. And of course that's all disappeared now, and we're down to almost
I hope that you'll look at that issue and see if there's something that you can do for these districts that desperately need money to improve their educational systems and get them back to where they once were.
Thank you. We do have this bill up for hearing again in Salem on Tuesday, and I'll raise this issue in the committee.
Okay, thank you very much.
The question that's been raised today. And if there are any other questions, let us know. Okay. Well, I'm going to... Do my committee members have a question about this bill? I'll close the hearing on this bill and then open it up for any other discussion that we have, unless you have questions. Okay. I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 318. We're so formal in the legislature, but... and I will just open it up. Anybody who didn't get a chance to speak today, we've got about 5 minutes. We're here for you. We're going to have lunch with you. But come on down so you can have your voice on the record.
Thank you. I'd like to I'm Ron Wardman. I'm on the school board for Myrtle Point. I also taught there for 30 years, retired 8 years ago, started my own business. And I want to respond to something that Senator Berger said. When I was teaching at Myrtle Point, back in the good old days, we had 7 vocational teachers and almost 30 vocational programs. At that time, ESD put on a skills day with hundreds of kids that participated in it, and it was one of the things that the kids looked forward to all year long, to compete with other schools and to on a head-to-head competition in welding and construction and things like that. And of course, that's all disappeared now. And we're down to almost nothing in our schools for kids to have electives, and they have almost no options as they think about their future because they have no experience in dealing with what the opportunities are out there. My business now is that I do I'm an architectural draftsman and do a lot of house planning, and I have a lot of business in Bandon, and I work with a lot of contractors. Their problem is they can't find qualified workers. We had a building construction program that when these kids finished that program, they could step right into a construction job with virtually no instruction from supervisors. And all that stuff is gone. So if you think about increasing the requirements, as it's been said by other people, you're going to eliminate even more electives. And it's just wrong for our kids. We're only focusing on maybe a third of the kids, and we're disregarding the other two-thirds, and we need to take them into consideration. We're losing them by big numbers, and your dropout rates are going to even increase more. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Senator Morse has a question. Do you have a question, Mr. Ordman, or just a comment?
Just a comment. And
okay.
I really appreciate the testimony that has been given here this morning. Just a comment and a follow-up, the theme that I've been hearing, we've been hearing. A statement was made by one of our university presidents to me that the educational policies of the state of Oregon drive high school students into two tracks. One is the university college track, and the other track is failure. And that's what I'm hearing.
Well, that was a bit depressing. It was a reality, I think, but it was a bit depressing. Thank you for that comment. We've got two more comments.
Just, close. Thanks for the opportunity for the whatever session that we want to speak about. Being on the city council, I'm a builder, and being on the city council, we were looking for new revenue streams for our schools, potentially. And so system development charges are have been written in the ORSs for cities to charge for growth-related issues. So we started looking, and I wanted to see the possibilities of an SDC for schools. And so in researching the ORSs, whether it was designed that way or it's just happenstance, I'm not here to say, but our current ORSs do not allow SDCs for schools. And so if this could be discussed, I know it's another time in another committee, but if we can provide for growth with water and sewer and storm drains and streets, it would seem logical that schools should fit in there. They're doing it in other states. It can be done. Furthermore, other states are charging bedroom taxes, school impact fees. Roadblocks have also been set up in our state that don't allow that. This limitation on tax dollars, this ceiling that you're discussing, you only have so much money. You got to take it from here to there. Somehow that ceiling has to be removed or raised. Now, I don't like to pay taxes any more than anyone else. However, I cannot build houses today that I built for the same that price 10 years ago. It's impossible. And that's the same realism that you're existing when you're dealing with personnel. The costs of personnel are not staying the same as inflation. They are well beyond that. And if I had to sum up my 6 years as a school board member, it has been very depressing to watch the financial picture erode away from underneath our feet. So, thank you.
Thank you. And for the record, you'll need to state your name again because we're audio.
Okay, Larry Anderson, Brookings Harbor School Board Chair.
Thank you. And Mr. Anderson, I was looking here to tell you that one of the bills that we introduced out of this commission was a bill to modify the system development charge statute for schools. And there's also, I think, one pending in the House that I think that we'll see some compromises made, but I think you'll see something this session. And I think it's appropriate that we hear from the superintendent of the school district to sum up and send us on to lunch. So,
thank you.
Mr. Bell, why don't you go ahead?
Forrest Bell with the Reedsport School District. Just quick comment. We've spoken a good deal about local school districts and the problems that we have here. There are two sources, however, that have been historically great supports for local school districts that have really suffered. I remember a time when the Department of Education was helpful, and I regret to say that that no longer exists. The other thing is changes in the funding mechanism for the ESDs. Our ESD has been cut back so severely that one indicator would be 5 years ago, Reedsport School District paid $20,000 for all of the services we got from the ESD. Now we pay $250,000 5 years later for those same services. what has happened, I'm afraid, is that the changing in the way we fund our system has created we still have the need. We still have to purchase those things through contract with them. And it's simply shifted the burden back on the districts. Well, that's okay, except that we're getting more money to buy those services with at the same time. We're losing that money because of student enrollment. So that's created some difficulties for them. Great people at RESD, but not the resource they once were. And finally, I would like to say all of folks here, you're all invited to lunch. We hope you will stay and enjoy lunch at the conclusion of this meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. And I hope to finish up my cinnamon roll from breakfast, too. I remember the days at Reed Fort High School when it was chili and cinnamon roll day. That was my favorite day to eat lunch. I do want to thank all of you for coming. It has been a delight, and my feet are cold. They are all the way cold now, not just the toes. And I, you know, what that does for me is take me back to Salem with a newfound understanding of what's going on in our smaller school districts. And Senator Berger, do you have a closing comment you'd like to make, since this is your district as well?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I do, and it'll be a very brief comment. But one thing that really concerns me and in all of the committees and public hearings that I hear is the referral to you can get it on the Internet and giving an address. And I just want to serve as a reminder to people that every household in Oregon does not have a computer. And so I think as long as we serve the public, there should always be some optional way for people to get information from you. And I should say that to State Board of Education, who commented that they had a website, and I think that's fine. Wonderful. I do too, and I enjoy it. But I think that there are many people that would like to have information, and there should be a way for them to get it.
And Senator Berger, you are exactly right, and I looked through my notes. Chris Nichols from the Brookings Harbor School District testified that they bought their last computers 10 years ago. And there's not enough bandwidth in their community to upgrade. So you're exactly right, Senator. You're exactly right. And Senator Morse, I'll give you the last word.
Well, I'm sure it will not be the last word.
Well, just give us 30 seconds, and so, because we're all hungry, we want to go to lunch.
Again, thank you so much for hosting us and testifying. And one thing that you have done for me personally is renewed my commitment to return to the Capitol and find the way that we can build a solid financial foundation for this state that will move us forward and will provide for the needs that we have, particularly in the area of education. The financial foundation that we have today is crumbling. It is not working. It's one thing to be inside the Capitol and you kind of get insulated. But when you get out and you visit and you understand what's happening in your region, we have a job to do. And the number one job is to provide the financial support for our critical services. And that's a job yet to be done. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you all for hosting us today. Thank you for all the support staff providing food and service, and all of you who drove up and down and over. We really appreciate it. And with that, we're going to adjourn, and we'll see you in the cafeteria.